Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I woke up like this, flawless. That's what Beyonce says. A new law makes California the first state to ban discrimination against black students and employees over their natural hairstyles. Governor Gavin Newsom signed the bill into law yesterday. It protects black people with styles like dreadlocks or cornrows. CBS This Morning Saturday co-host that's Michelle Miller is at Essence Festival in New Orleans, an annual expo celebrating black culture and music. Michelle, what's behind this new law?
Well, Gail, good morning. Well, the Essence Festival, this festival we're talking about, is all about empowering black women, not just in mind and spirit, but in how they wear their hair, their crown. Let's face it, hair matters to everybody. But the authors of this new law say that women with kinky and curly hair, often discriminated against, viewed as inferior even. Dove recently sponsored a survey that showed that black women were 80% more likely to change their natural hair to conform to social norms and expectations on the job. So there are a lot of folks who think this new law is long overdue.
It had nothing to do with the job. I knew the job or you wouldn't have hired me. It just had everything to do with my hair.
Chastity Jones was tangled in a nearly 10-year legal battle after she says an employer took back a job offer at an Alabama call center because she refused to cut her hair.
She said, "Are those dreadlocks in your hair?" And I just looked at her and I was like, "These?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Yes, they are." She said, "Well, we can accept that here."
In 2013, Jones sued the company for discrimination and lost wages, but her claim was dismissed. Last year, the NAACP filed a petition to bring her case to the Supreme Court. It declined to hear the case.
She just didn't make me feel like I was wanted there, period.
She's not alone.
What's wrong with her hair?
In August of 2018, Louisiana sixth grader Faith Finity was kicked off school grounds because her braided hair violated school policy. And a few months later, a wrestling official told New Jersey high school athlete Andrew Johnson he would have to cut his dreadlocks in order to compete.
To make sure our beauty is welcome.
Duck executive A.C. Eggleston Bracey spearheads the Crown Coalition, an alliance of corporate and community organizations whose goal is to highlight bias that pressures women to conform to Eurocentric standards of beauty.
What happens is your natural hair is one way, and you think you have to change that to go into a work environment because the view of what's professional is different than what your natural state is.
And now lawmakers are stepping in. California State Senator Holly Mitchell introduced the first law to associate hair as an extension of one's race, which is legally protected.
Terminated because of the way they choose to wear their hair.
The way my hair grows out of my head as a black woman is a trait of race.
Lawmakers in New York and New Jersey have now also introduced versions of the Crown Act. California Governor Gavin Newsom says he's proud to lead the nation by being the first to sign it.
The Crown Act is now law.
There's a human element to this. We don't want to diminish people. We don't want to demean people. We have to own up to the sins of the past. And I hope that folks are paying attention all across this country.
And New York could be the second state to sign this bill into law. It's awaiting the governor's signature. And folks here at Essence, well, they're having a big celebration breakfast on Friday. The Crown Coalition is meeting to march this victory, hopefully, they say, into a national movement.
Michelle, Jerika? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Definitely a topic I think I know you have experienced.
I certainly do. Listen, it's 2019. Yeah. I don't know too many little black girls. I grew up in Turkey, and I can remember many times there was three little black girls in the class always being asked, can I touch your hair? You know, just we all had the two braided pigtails or three braided pigtails being asked, can I touch your hair? Because they'd never seen anything like it. That's why I like Crown, creating a respectful and open world for natural hair.
Yeah.
I do think this is a good idea, too, Tony.
I do think it's a good idea. I'm shocked that actually there were people losing jobs and getting kicked out of school and having to cut and being asked to cut their hair before they can compete in this day and age. It's just surprising to me. I guess
it's a way to
be.
Express yourself.
Yes.
And like you said, I think there's sort of an ignorance about, you know, your hair, especially if you're African-American. I remember being in school and people saying, why don't you wash your hair every day?
Yeah.
Do you use grease? What is that about?
Yes.
So it is an open conversation that needs to happen so people are more aware and sensitive to this.
And they make certain assumptions based on your hairdo, which also many times are not valid.
Correct.
So this is good. Crown, creating a respectful and open world for natural hair.
Did you see
that in California?
You grew up in Turkey? We're going to have to talk about that some future date. All right.
Yes, I did.
Black brother.
Black brother of hell.
Oh, what's going on? What's going on?
Who do I put a grievance in with? About you taking overtime away from me 3 weeks ago. Who do I put a grievance in with?
What's going on, Marvin? Just another day in the Cranston Fire Department. You remember that tape? That was a Cranston firefighter getting into it with Deputy Chief Paul Valletta, who is in line now to become the next chief of the Cranston Police Department. He's got the backing of Mayor Fung. How that's possible? It's Cranston. It's Cranston. What's up is down. What's left is right. Remember the fight? The I-team had this tape. One firefighter getting into it, Valletta. Valletta said he insulted my mother. Then the chief, according to reports, jumped over the table, went at it with this guy. Now, he was found not guilty of assault in a later court action, but guilty of disorderly conduct. Play the tape.
Go f*** your face. F*** your face. F*** you.
Nice.
Just telling you.
What did you say about my mother? What?
Go f*** yourself, you f***.
Hey, hey.
Your mother.
All right. A lot of bleeping going on there. Now, there's another version of the tape, I understand, where, according to Jim Vincent, the head of the local NAACP, Valletta uses the N-word. I've only heard that version, as you have heard, on the I-team. But Jim Vincent is online with me now, says, no, I've heard another version, Gene. It's a cleaner version, unbleeped. It's the same thing. And he says the N-word. And Vincent said, I listened to this several times, and I know now that that's Valletta's voice. I had that checked out by people who know him, and I don't think Valletta is fire chief material. He's on the line with me now at 6:07 in the morning. Good morning, Jim Vincent.
Good morning, Jane.
Did I set that up right? You have heard another unedited, unredacted tape, and you say Chief Valletta, Deputy Chief Valletta, uses the N-word. Go ahead and lay it out for me at 6:07 in the morning.
Yes, I heard it. I heard it twice. I didn't have to hear it several times after the first time. That was bad enough. But I said, let me hear it one more time. I mean, there were bleeps in there, but clearly at the point, about a minute and 24 seconds into the version that I heard, I heard the N-word mentioned. And, not knowing either one of the people well enough in terms of their voices, you know, I had, there was a reporter that called me yesterday. They said they would check out to make sure that they would ensure that it was him. And it said pretty much that they had verified that it was his voice.
Okay.
So, but the N-word was mentioned on the tape. I don't think it was the other guy. So it was him. And, I'm kind of disturbed by that because I know there was an incident at the Bud Long Pool and there was, you know, some kids from Providence and there was a fight and whatever. And I guess the N-word was being used. And Mayor Fung said, you know, that word would not be tolerated. I do not tolerate the use of that word. And I applaud him for that. Mm-hmm. I agree with him in terms of the fact that N-word shouldn't be used by anybody. So with that being said, I think the mayor now should look at this person that's being proposed as a chief to reconcile, you know, what his standard is and what the chief said.
Okay, now you're going to send me that unredacted tape.
I'm going to send you that. I already sent the email to the person that played it for me.
Okay.
And I heard it. I mean, it wasn't something that somebody heard that told me. I heard it.
Okay.
And you know, my thing is that you know, the mayor has to make a decision. I mean, does he want somebody leading a department, mind you, that is not one person of color, and there's over 200 people, not one person. And we've been working on that. You know, I've been trying to work with the mayor's office to help diversify that department. It's been a tough way to go. I'm still optimistic and still want to do the best thing for the city of Cranston. Now, I read in the journal that he said, the only reason, I don't know what I'm talking about, and I just want a minority chief. We have never talked about a minority chief in terms of the Cranston Fire Department. That's a red herring. That's a canard. We have never talked about that. The only thing we talked about as far as the fire department is the fact that there is not one person of color in that department, and we need to do something about it. So this whole idea about I talked about a chief, and he knows, and I know, that the contract says that you have to have a person that's within the Cranston Fire Department.
Right.
So if I know that, then why would I be talking about doing a search or anything else? I'm not happy with that kind of contract, believe me. But that's the contract. So it doesn't make any sense what he said. You know, I do know what I'm talking about, and he knows I know what I'm talking about. And I never talked about a minority for that that position.
Okay.
And he knows that, too. I don't appreciate that.
All right. Let's a couple of things to go over. When I hear this tape, the same version that you've heard, Jim, there's not going to be room for debate. I'm going to say, well, it sounds like
right.
This. I'm going to hear it clear as a bell. Yeah, there it is.
Pretty much clear as a bell. You know, I heard it. It wasn't like it was muffled. It wasn't like, okay, you got to play it again about two or three times. I heard it, and he said, Jim, you want to hear it again? I said, I do.
Okay.
Just make sure. And then I said, okay, I'm convinced. It wasn't a thing where, I mean, he said, I'll play it for you again. I said, no, that's okay.
Right.
I mean, enough is enough. I heard it. I mean, I don't beat me over the head with it. I heard the word. I don't like the word. It's offensive by anybody. And it kind of tells you who a person is. I mean, you know, I mean, Gene, I know a lot of white people. They could be angry as I don't know what, or they could be drunk as I don't know what. And they will never, ever, ever use that word. Okay. So I don't want to hear about it was done in anger or done drunk or whatever, because that doesn't explain anything. That's an excuse. Okay. When people use that word, they reveal a part of who they are.
Now, Fung could be between a rock and a hard place, because the contract calls you have to come up from the ranks. As I understand it, there were three candidates. Two of them dropped out. That leaves Valletta, who does score high, who has been there. Apparently, as a firefighter, he's got the goods to deliver. You would say what to that?
Well, I mean, he has a dilemma. I mean, you know, he said that, you know, that word would not be tolerated at the Bud Long. Talking about the Bud Long pool. Well, if that's the case, then you can't have this guy be a chief, because you cannot tolerate a person that uses this word be your chief, I would think. So you would have to do something else. I don't know what that would be, given the fact that you just said the other two candidates dropped out. Maybe you reopen the position for other people in the Cranston Fire Department to apply and see what happens there, and get somebody that scores high that doesn't use that word. I don't know. I'm not an HR professional, but I'm just saying that here's the facts. I heard the word mentioned. I also know that he has this feeling that that word should never be mentioned. He mentioned that in context of the Bud Long poll. So if you put those two together, you know, he has a decision to make.
Well, look, you may have given him the out. I'm not sure that Funk's not looking for a way to get out of this. I'm not sure he's crazy about putting Valletta in there, because Valletta's got other problems. He had threatened.
He does.
Threatened to assault the then Mayor Laffey. In fact, that's on tape. He stood at a meeting and said, "I'll knock you out." And he's been in and out of the news for other reasons, in courthouses and things like that. So we'll see where this goes today. You send me that tape. Have you sent that tape to Mayor Fung? Is he listening to the same version you are, or is he listening to the edited, redacted one that Channel 10 aired?
No. I told the person that gave me the tape, or had me listen to the tape, I told him to send it to City Hall. Now, I will check to make sure that it didn't go to somebody in City Hall.
Okay.
It went to the mayor himself. I know it went to his office, or somebody in his office, at least. At a minimum, it did.
Right.
But it did go directly to him. Not sure. I will recheck that and make sure that happens as well.
Well, I know Mayor Fung is up early listening to the radio. He's on top of things. And if he feels the need to give me a call, he can always do that. He knows how to get in touch with
us. You know, I welcome that. All trust right. me.
From what we understand, Funk said, I listened to the tape. I didn't hear it. So you're saying it's clear as a bell. I'm going to listen to it myself, and maybe this changes things.
Go ahead. He might have heard the edited tape
you're right,
that you have.
You're right, which is the one I have.
Right.
But I'm anxious to hear yours, and you say it's there, clear as a bell. You checked it out.
Yep.
There's no surprises here. All right.
Right. Okay.
Jim Vincent, stay by your phone later today, because I suspect this is going to be one that develops.
All right, Gene. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim Vincent. He's the president of the local chapter of the NAACP. Says, I heard the tape, unredacted, unedited, not the one you're playing on Channel 10, not the one I just played in the morning, and I hear it there, heard it twice. And that disqualifies Valletta from becoming the chief. I said, well, there's two people fighting. Is it the other guy? He said, I checked that. It's Valletta's voice. Okay. We'll see. We'll see what comes of it. By the way, Valletta, if you're up early, I don't know what shift you're working. You're always welcome to call in, too. Get your side of the story here, unless you got to check it through the mail, whatever it is. 438-9776. All right, 614.
Holiday or no, it would not be the system of racism, white supremacy without a white person being accused of calling someone a nigger. Someone at the fire department specifically. No time to put out all of the fires and blazes from people who didn't read the instructions on their explosive devices for all the festivities. We got controversy over whether or not the fire chief called someone a nigger. And we don't have any black employees to boot, but context of white supremacy. This is our weekly segment, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. We do not take holidays here at the Cows. Racists do not take holidays either, even though I am sure there are victims of racism who probably don't have to be on the plantation today, may not have had to be there yesterday, might not have to be back until Monday. And make sure I'm being specific, since this is just a so-called holiday that is exclusive to the U.S. No, Stacy in the U.K., other listeners who are not in the States don't know anything about so-called Independence Day, so it's just another day. And replace white supremacy with justice. Either way, same rules apply. If we have listeners, non-white people anywhere in the known universe, you have figured out some things that work well. You have, or I can at least say at this point, you got your code together. You're still working on improvements, but at this point, you do not have problems with your hairstyle. You wear whatever you want. You come in, they're not touching your hair, asking you crazy questions, telling you that you can't get a promotion because of your hair, anything like that. You don't have any issues. If you need to take a day off, a week off, a sick day to attend to a family member, they are not changing your schedule around. If you wrote in and requested time off in March so that you didn't have to work this weekend, they don't come back and mess with you at the last week in June and say, oh, wait a minute. I know you put in that time off request 3 months ago, but we had some major changes. We're going to have to take that vacation time back. You don't have any of those problems. You put your time off requests in, boop, everything is handled. You have figured out how to solve these types of problems so that you don't have these conflicts in your work experience. Please take advantage if you are given the holiday. Call in 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We are always grateful for non-white people who have figured out some codified things that work well in the workplace. So do not be a spectator. Dial in if you figured out some codification. Certainly, people who are having difficulties where you would like some counter-racist suggestions to help you solve problems without creating new problems, please dial in as well. You're always welcome. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Whew, lots to get to. Let's see. We'll go to the sound clips first. The Crown Act. It's an acronym, they say. In California, I think they said New York is also looking at similar legislation that is supposed to ban discrimination against black employees for natural hair in the workplace. I don't know what the enforcement of this law will look like. If we have listeners in the California area, if you have thoughts, be interested in that as well. But I just, it's, I can envision scenarios where, let's say we got a black female. She has hair like Dr. Welsing, the grandsister. She goes in for a job. She's applying or what have you. You have some race soldiers who are on the hiring committee. They can say, oh, man, we don't want, you know, any nappy head Negroes working here. Oh, no. But they just, you know, that won't be the reason that's given. It'll just be something else. You know, she messed up there. Look, she's got smudges on her application. See, that's what it'll be. As opposed to the hair. I don't know how you would be able to enforce that. Are we, is the EEOC going to be responsible for enforcing this, that they got this law on hands now? Is that who you go to? Because I've seen how, you know, impotent they can be in dealing with racism, white supremacy. Another problem that I had with this, and I'm open if I have misinterpreted, if I haven't seen the correct data or there are, you know, additional reports, because this is pretty popular. So maybe I just haven't read the right reports or enough of them. But most of what I have seen, the content has been very much dealing with black females. And I certainly know that black females have lots of problems and face lots of terrorism in the workplace. We've had folks over the years, for a decade now, who've dialed in to share some of their experiences. Absolutely. However, we have also had black males who have participated and talked about their hair also being a problem in the workplace. And Gus T can put his hand up first. I don't need to hear from any black males. I can speak for myself. Cornrows being a problem, locks being a problem, beard being a problem. And I think that's not uncommon. There are many black males, and I heard very few reports. In fact, the report that I played, that's the only one that I've seen thus far that even mentioned black males. I've seen a bunch of different videos, one where they had Governor Newsom, a suspected racist in California, who was signing the law allegedly into effect, and he was flanked by a bunch of black females. And I thought, you couldn't find one black guy throw in there with some cornrows or locks? You couldn't find one to throw in there? Yep, you too. You're covered too. No more of that. The shape, same thing. You couldn't find one black male to throw in there with a, if it applies to black males and black females. Now, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just supposed to be for black females. I don't know, but I certainly haven't seen black males being included in this. As I said, even though I know the hair thing is a major problem in the workplace for black males as well, unless I've been misinformed. If folks out there think, you know, Gus is talking loony, please dial in and let me know. Let's see. Next on the list, the sound clip. Cranston Fire Department white employee firefighter has called another non-white person a nigger. This is why I talk about the recording, because I think that segment would have sounded very different if there were no audio. Now, I mean, they can talk about, did you get the redacted version, the non-redacted version? If there's a, that's why I say, it should never be any redactions with regards to someone said something racist. Well, let's just hear. Let's see what they said. Maybe he didn't say nigger. Maybe he said nincompoop. We don't know. But let's hear what he said. There's no need to beep it out. We, you know, you can give whatever, what they say, trigger warning that's needed. All of the, anything that works that opposes everyone having clarity. There's no confusion. We know exactly what was stated. Everybody knows what the deal is. That's what we want. Anything that works against that, anything that comes up short of that, that supports racism, white supremacy, in my view. The fire department, that's so trite. We've had so many examples over years of whites in the fire department. And it's not just this race soldier called another black person a nigger. Yeah, that would be an act of racism, but it's, oh, and yeah, by the way, we don't have any black employees at this department. We've been working for years. And again, that is a pattern. A retired firefighter in Florida has talked about this. Those are good jobs, good benefits, stable. You could be there for a good number of years. All of that, pension to boot. We don't want Negroes with those types of jobs. And you've had fire departments, not just in Cranston, but across the so-called U.S. Sea to shining sea. Fireworks all the way. But they said, oh, no, we're not going to have any Negroes here in the fire department. Absolutely not. And worked aggressively to keep retired firefighter and the like from even joining the ranks. Not just the fire department, many of them, but I think it would have sounded very different if they had not had recording to begin with. And the hiring. Let's get back to the hiring. This is why we need to have more non-white people hired. This is why we need to have deeper scrutiny of the folks that are going to be promoted and or hired into the department, because it seems like we've had a legacy of hiring white people who practice white supremacy racism. And it's 2020, that day should be done, right? Next, let's see. If you are not able to dial in, you've been having too much fun with all the partying and what have you that has gone on. If you're not able to dial in, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We will share your, if you have either questions, if you're looking for suggestions, we can read that and offer. If you are just looking to add your thoughts, commentary to what's been presented, we can do that as well. We can share anonymously if you have, you know, issues about being identified. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Going to folks who wrote in, quite a number of them, and we even got racist jokes this week. How about that? Let's see. Let's see. Oh, they were talking about another person's incident that I already got that one. Next, let's see. Racist joke while in training. Racist joke at work while in training. I'm in a training session at work, and our instructor just shared a joke with the class. He claimed this was supposed to be an icebreaker. Let's see. Joke. I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, the Coon Man, where my high school was 30% black and 70% terrified. Great. Great. Some people laughed, others snickered and or sighed. I stayed codified on the inside with no physical response. However, I jotted down a quick note and kept it pushing. Tacky, trashy, and downright terroristic. That is a great illustration. And particularly, you're in training. I don't know what sort of training this was, if it's, you know, just some minutia dealing with the job or what have you, but oh, man, we were in a training session and someone said this. Write that there down immediately. Exact details. And that might be one that I've said before. Excuse me, sir, ma'am. Let me make sure I got that down again. 30% black and 70% terrified. That was it. Boop. Gotcha. All righty. Nothing else to say. No ugly thoughts. No cursing. Keep it moving. Make sure I got my notes straight here for the training. All set. All right. Next thing. And you don't have to go report it. You don't have to say anything. You can file it away because there will probably be other remarks or other incidents of white supremacy to report. But I would definitely write that down. Even if you don't want to be that flagrant about it, boop, that goes into the workplace journal. Exact detail, date, time. That one probably would be a little difficult to catch, to know he's going to make a joke, because that's, you know, 5 seconds, how long it takes to say that. Probably would be difficult, unless you're just recording on a regular basis, to get audio of that. But, oh, man. Woo, that is lovely when you can get that sort of thing documented and or recorded so you have evidence it was said, it was in front of witnesses. Love it. Toxic, racist environment. And no less, this is in a training session where this person felt confident enough, powerful enough, no concerns about, I don't know, is this professional? Is this the sort of thing that should be shared in the workplace? Oh, nah. Who doesn't love a good nigger joke? Hey, and who isn't scared of a nigger? That's normally something I do think is important, to at least break down the joke. For this one to be 30% black and 70% terrified, even with that word, I'm reminded of James Lowen, who was extraordinarily reluctant to use the word terrorism or any of its derivatives to describe what was happening to black people when they were being raped, killed, burned out of their houses, you name it. It was in there. And not just to one person, entire groups, dozens, hundreds of black people this happening to, and this happening all across the country. July Perry. That was just for July 4th down in Florida, where they lynched him and threw out all the black people down in Florida. Just put a monument up and a tacky apology for that. But 70% terrified. Again, this notion that white people are afraid, scared of black people. Why? And it ends up just being justification for violence and abuse of black people. But 70% terrified. This, in fact, reminds me of both the books we just read, just finished. Sundown Town's James Loewen, Wouldn't Say Terrorism. Just started Gavin DeBecker's The Gift of Fear, which is the same thing. We have reason. We are correct to have fears. We should investigate. Negroes are scary and frightening. Next, let's see. For workplace racism. Okay. Non-white male. I'm looking for some codified responses to a question I was asked while on the job that caught me off guard. While at a customer's home, a black female in the company of a black male asked me how much I make. I believe she was being tacky. My response was to repeat her question. Then I answered honestly. I really didn't want to answer, but I was so off guard. I didn't know what to say, but to be honest, what are some suggestions for this kind of questioning while on your job from a customer? Since this is a customer, I would think you might have a little more leeway, although you could perhaps use the same code either way. It might make a difference that these were black people, you say, or, you know, you might have the same response for everyone. With regards to salary, I think many people across the world have some hesitancy about just sharing what their rate of compensation is for a variety of reasons. So I would just say try to come up with your own code in advance about salary and as many things as you can think about what you want to share about. How much do you want to share about your salary? How much do you want to share about your personal life? Those types of things that might come up on a job, I feel like salary is one. Already come to some decisions about whether or not that's information that you want to share. If you don't want to share it, that's all I would say. You said this was something that you didn't really feel comfortable divulging. I would just say, hey, I don't discuss salary. I don't share my salary. And if you want to add anything so that it's, you know, less contentious, more jovial, they might say, you get I don't make enough to boast about my salary. That might help put people at ease, but you know that should not necessarily be your primary concern. In this instance, if someone, and particularly a stranger, is asking you about your paycheck, I don't discuss salary on the job and leave it at that. And I think we've had that, have that ready made. I think sometimes it can feel difficult to ignore people and or to refuse to answer their question. It can feel like you're breaking a social norm and that you are doing something that you shouldn't. But I would just have that in mind in advance that there's nothing incorrect about that. I've seen many other people employ that code where they don't share salary on the job or just have topics that they don't address. Generally, it does not cause a problem. I don't think you would get in trouble, and especially for a customer just saying, I don't discuss salary on the job. You know, all right, next, moving on to whatever, you know, they came to do, however they came to patronize the business. But I just would leave it at that. If other folks have thoughts about, you know, how you would respond to this. I don't know if you would have a different response if it was like another coworker who was making this inquiry or customers. I would try to have one code for that and keep it pushing so that you're not having to do a whole lot of thinking. I would say if you are questioned about something in a workplace or anywhere and you don't quite feel comfortable, you're kind of still thinking through what you want to say or how you want to respond, feel free to take time. Pause for a few moments and just say, I have to think about that for a moment. Not sure if I want to answer. I'll think about that and get back to you. And again, and unless somebody means you some harm, like there should be very few instances where somebody is going to like demand, like you got to answer me right now in the next, particularly a customer, but anybody, you got to answer my question in the next 5 seconds. Next, you know, no, you can't have 30 minutes to think. You can't have an hour to think. You got to answer my question right now. Like, I doubt too many of us are going to be in that type of situation too frequently. And if it, that, whew, definitely put an asterisk there. That is an, a very unique moment where there's probably some strange things going on. Let's see. Other folks who wrote in, if you all listeners, if you have thoughts about salary and whether or not you share that publicly. If folks already have a code about that, feel free to share that as well. Let's see. Next, I'll read one more from someone who wrote in. Okay. This is a black female listener. She's written in before. She has the white supervisor. I believe this is a cowbell white supervisor who's married to a black male, but she does a lot of falsely accusing black people in the office of making mistakes, errors that they didn't commit, and just, you know, generally practicing racism. So victim, she writes in, I provided an attachment for this. If you can take a look at it, Gus, as someone who doesn't work in my office, and tell me if I did anything wrong. But first, let me preface. Whenever a client calls in and requests for checks to be mailed to a different address, the rule is they have to submit the address change request in writing. In this case, the check already went out without confirming the address, and the check was returned to us by the post office. The client calls and says we have the wrong address. So I note the address and advise the client to send something in writing. They send the request and it was confirmed by the file handler and the supervisor of the address change request being received. The returned checks do not come to me, so I would never know. My female supervisor, who is married to a black male, came to me with these printed notes and throws it on my desk saying the check was returned to us again by the post office. You got a call from the client and didn't tell anyone about it. This is something you need to think about the next time this happens. She then walks away laughing as she was on her way to happy hour to celebrate another employee's birthday at 12 p.m. I just want to pause right there. What does that moron say? Let me think. It's worst combination in the known universe. Alcohol. Whites. Did they say happy hour at 12 o'clock? Make sure, did I read that correctly? She was on her way laughing as she was on her way to happy hour to celebrate another employee's birthday at 12 p.m. Well, maybe that is what comes with the system of white supremacy. I don't know about any of you all, but going to get drinks, happy hour at 12 noon? Wow. Even for so-called July 4th? Wow. Continuing, so we're drunk at noon. Let me reiterate that the returned mail does not come to me, and I would never know until the client calls. The returned mail goes to the file handler on the supervisor manager, depending on who is here. Please look at the attached notes she printed and tell me if I did anything wrong as a person who does not work here. Do you notice the date she received the returned check and did not mail it to the correct address until a month later and made the client resend the address change request again, although she confirmed a month ago that the address change request was received? I deal with this every day and it has been amplified since a white male employee was promoted to the department, which has been terrible. And she concludes there, and she has, love it. She has her picture. She titled the file Evidence. That's the way that we should proceed in the workplace. Everything is about evidence and just going over things to make sure that you're following policy and procedure, particularly once you know. We talk about assumptions, but you should already be thinking, if you're in a work environment, regardless, racists or other victims, I'm going to assume that everybody here is not looking out for my best interest. I'm just going to assume that we're in a system of white supremacy, so everybody here is not looking for me to do well, to succeed, to get all my raises and bonuses. Everybody here is not interested in seeing me reach my full potential in my career. That being said, I am going to already be getting my evidence together and making sure I'm covering myself from attacks, abuse, mistreatment, and I'm going to be pointing that out to work as well as I can to see if I can get those types of things stopped as soon as I become aware of them. To get them stopped without creating new problems. Documentation, that's a great one. Asking questions, great. What I'm looking at right here, doing things where you can keep an electronic record, where you're able to send emails, or if it's some sort of direct communication, whatever the message exchange is, but you have electronic documentation with dates, times, I contacted, this is what I did, I asked questions, boom, 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 to cover yourself consistently. As I said, it's terrible to have to think that way, but this is a system of white supremacy racism where people are probably not going to be working in your best interest. So you just make sure that I am extra looking out for my best interests so that I can do well. I know for some of you that includes, hey, I also try to look out for other victims of racism as I am able in the workplace. Kudos to you. The email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Feel free to drop an email to the listener who wrote in this. It looks like you did things correct here. Just me as an ignorant victim who is just kind of scanning over and reading it. What I have here, it looks like you have done things correctly. And I would say, again, I think a part of all of this is it kind of gets us to that point where we question ourselves. We second guess ourselves. And oh, man. Maybe I messed that up, or maybe I did, or we just don't have the same confidence that we did before. All of the constant barrage of, oh, you messed that up. Oh, you messed that up. Now you think about this the next time. A lot of that stuff for many victims, that has an impact to where this sort of thing happens. We talked about that before. I think you have been doing phenomenal. And I think if you weren't, they probably wouldn't be harassing you because it seems like this has been going on for quite some time. I think you've been doing quality, competent work. It seems like you've been on this job for some years, and they're just, you know, practicing racism. So just continue to be diligent with the note taking and knowing that this conduct is going to continue, to be diligent and making sure that you're gathering evidence exactly the way that you titled the file, to know that more of this is going to come if you stay there. Even if you transition to another job, it'll just be a different form of racism, white supremacy, till we solve this problem. But continue being diligent, codified, stick to whatever you're doing on the job, because it looks like it's it is rolling. If other folks, if you have suggestions for what has been discussed thus far, if you have suggestions, the listener who wrote in about whether or not you would share salary with a customer, what you make with a random customer in a workplace setting, if you have any suggestions for our female listener here, where she's again being accused of things or accused of making an error with this check that didn't get to the right address. If you have any suggestions for her, any of the other folks who dialed in, or if you have your own situation that you would like to address, certainly the hair piece that I mentioned, if folks have an idea about how that's going to be enforced, if we've had anyone, if you're in California or you've researched this and you said, oh yeah, this is going to be enforced, the EEOC got a whole new branch that's specifically supposed to deal with crown enforcement and black hair issues. They got a whole new wing. It's going to be great. They got guns and everything. Hey, news to me. Let me know all about that. Or if folks have thoughts about whether or not males, black males, are included in the Crown Act in California and enforcement and making sure they're not having these problems either. If you have thoughts, questions around that or your own situation, *61, folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, Gus.
Greetings, be in Toronto. Got at least one person who is not having 4th of July festivities.
Yes, instead it was Canada Day about 3 days ago, but I didn't celebrate that either.
Good job, knew you wouldn't.
Yes, greetings to yourself, to your callers and listeners as well. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to listen to what occurred. I was busy rushing home from work to be able to at least participate, and I didn't remember the code to get in, to, because usually I'll put in the code and then I'll be able to hear the news feed that you've put together, as well as the letters of inquiry. So unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to respond directly, but based on what I have to share, I might end up responding indirectly. So the first part is I wanted to give you an update on a report with respect to the white women that are in the workplace or the plantation that I'm at. Things have gotten a bit better, not with their attitude, but with how I've decided to take care of the situation. I believe it was either last week or perhaps the week before, there was a clip with Dr. Frances Kress-Welsling, and I may be just paraphrasing how she has mentioned using your voice like a gun. That's where the idea just popped into my head. Yes, maybe this is it. I should start speaking up. But the way that I would speak up would be very strategic, of course. So what had happened was, in fact, yesterday, one of the white women was in front of the rest of the team. I usually come in the morning, and I'm very cordial. I say good morning, good evening, whichever comes first. So I said good morning, and she goes, "Oh, who's that? Who's that?" And I was like, "Huh." Typically, what I would have done is I would have just walked to my desk and just ignore it. And I've been ignoring these taunts for several times now. And, you know, I just, something within me was like, it's time to just set a boundary. So I advised her. I said, I started out with, well, first I made sure that it wasn't personalized. So I didn't use any I statements, and I avoided using how it makes me feel. I didn't use any feeling statements. So what I said was, you know, it's surprising, and I'll just call her Debbie for now. It's surprising to me, Debbie, that for a person who treasures professional relationships, you know, within this company, that you would actually put it at risk by making dehumanizing comments and cloaking them in a form of a joke. And they weren't prepared for that. They were not prepared for that. In fact, they were taken aback. And I ended up with, is this the way that you would like the company to want to be run, by addressing people in who's and what as opposed to their name? Do you think that that will bring about cohesiveness within the teamwork? She couldn't answer. And then I told her, I said, from here on in, I would suggest that we keep the day, the remainder of the day, positive and productive. Thank you. And then I walked to the deck. And what ended up happening was, of course, there are other people that are listening. And, you know, I just decided, okay, what I'm going to start doing is start illuminating their behavior. I'm going to start shedding light on their behavior by couching it in that way. So it's not making it personal, but it's making it to emphasize, well, this is the behavior that's going on. So that if anyone were to ask, oh, what's happened, like blah, 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 well, this is what's happened, and this is how I responded to it. And I plan to use that some more, because it felt really good to say something. The other piece about documenting is very important. And that's what I do with this situation. I've certainly taken on the suggestion that you had made, as well as from the UK, Stacey has made as well. In terms of documenting, nonetheless, even if I don't know who's doing what, if I happen to be in another aisle, So that's been done. That's in progress. Another suggestion I wanted to make is in terms of if someone is terminating their employment with their employer, I would highly caution them to look at the employment laws for their state or their province if they're in Canada, to find out how within what time frame the employer has to settle all accounts and give you all your funds by. The last plantation that I was on, even though I had submitted my 2 weeks resignation, the HR was telling me that I was going to get my paycheck 2 weeks from the time that I've submitted the resignation. And I know that here in Ontario, the employer will have to either settle your account by the next pay date, meaning the date that you would have gotten paid, or 7 days from the date that you submitted your resignation. And so when I forwarded that information, it's under the Employment Standards Act, when I forwarded that information to HR, they tried to contest me on it, of which luckily I was with the union. So I contacted my union rep, did a conference call, and the Employment Standards Act representative was able to confirm. And lo and behold, within 7 days from the date of resignation, all accounts were settled and they sent me my funds. So if there's anyone that is going through issues with employers withholding the funds, get very well acquainted with the employment law around that. And that's all I have to share for today. One more thing. I continue to eat very well. I've been doing a lot more exercise. So even after this program, I plan to do some exercises. I've been incorporating yoga, as well as guided meditations, and I've also been doing some Tai Bo and some other cardio exercises as well, and it's been making a huge difference, I find, in my overall attitude, in my ability to think more effectively. It just makes things a lot better, I find. So yes, that's all I need to share for today, and thank you.
Music to my ears, be in Toronto, Black people taking care of themselves. That is a crucial, maybe one of the most important components of counter-racism on the job and elsewhere, especially, I would say, on the job, because, man, oh, man, that gets a whole lot of victims of racism, dealing with all that stress and strife in the workplace and then ending up eating a lot of bad foods. They will frequently provide a lot of the poisonous products, donuts, pizza, and the like, sodas, all of that, and not exercising, which just can create exactly what we say consistently, that will not solve any problems and will create new problems, all of that. So I love it. Continue, eat well, take wonderful care of yourself. I might even be bold enough to suggest that the self-confidence to say, you know what, this tacky suspected racist, I just came in to greet them at the beginning of the day, and for them to respond, and that's what I'm going to say something. I suspect, I could be wrong, just when you feel a little bit better, you've been eating well, you've been doing a little bit of exercise, you get to feel better about your body, better about yourself overall, you have a little bit more Black self-respect to say, I'm not going to take that from that little tacky racist today. I am going to say something, even if it's just asking a question. I'm not saying you got to curse anybody out and yell and stomp. That's not even what B said. She just asking a question. I thought you are someone who values, cares about relationships. Is that the way that we want to conduct business here? Like, stay in the question lane. That works. Whatever continent, time zone, spot in the known universe that you happen to be, stay in the question lane. Asking questions And Carter, she couldn't even respond. Ugh, I've been called on my tackiness. Incidentally, that incident right there, you just come in and greet them. You're not asking a question. Can I borrow $5? Nothing. Good morning. And that's the response. What? Who's that? Dr. Cambon, when he's been on the program where he said, I don't even say good morning. I say morning. Evening. Afternoon, Tim. Evening, Mr. Johnson. Morning, Helen. I don't say good. This is just, I've done my duty. I'm not required to say good to you. That would be a great illustration right there. This is not, we're not friends, homies, none of that. I understand I could be 5 seconds away from a racist joke, being mistreated, any sort of thing. Morning, Helen. No goods. He said that some years ago, and I have implemented that. I thought that was great detail as well about getting as much pertinent info as you can. About some of that would just be at policy and procedure, because sometimes they will go over exiting the company when you join the company. Sometimes I've seen that before. I participated in that sometimes when they have like a training session, if they have a lengthy one at some jobs that lasts like more than a day or so, they might go over like, this is the procedure. If you're leaving, if you resign, if you're terminated, like benefits, blah, blah, blah. They'll go over, you know, all that information in detail. That's why I say it's always great part of the code. Go ahead and read the policy and procedure in detail so that you know it in advance. And then you can just, you know, refer to refresh your memory, as opposed to you're going over this for the first time now that you're leaving and you need to get all this information under a stressful situation. Have all those details together. We've, I think, had a number of different victims who've called in who've talked about leaving a job where it's been different questions and things, or where they didn't have access to pertinent information at the time that they were leaving the job, which can impact, you know, do I know how long I have my benefits and when am I supposed to get, you know, final check and all those, all these types of pertinent details. And sometimes they can be, you know, racist about providing information. Dr. Cambon says that as well. That's why they call us disadvantaged. You are at a disadvantage when they have information you don't. Find out any resource where you can get more information about what your rights are and getting everything that is owed to you as you are transitioning from one plantation to another. Try to make that as seamless and harmless for you as possible. But tremendous Black self-respect. Be speaking up. Hopefully more of us will be inspired to speak up and to speak in a counter-racist manner that solves problems without creating new problems. Let's see. Other folks, if you dialed in with a hand up, if you have either comments on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey, how's it going, Gus? This is Black Male Engineer. I haven't been around for a couple of months. Things have been going on. But I have a question. Like, I did catch some of your tweets. And I noticed you posted some information about the Boeing incident, you know, the crashed airplanes and Boeing and regulators. Did you guys talk about that in any of the previous calls?
The report that I posted about Boeing, they had a number of Black employees at their South Carolina facility who accused them of practicing racism, white supremacy. And I think one of the reports that I tweeted, it was about that. It was about the Boeing situation, workplace racism. However, they had a video within that that was, I mean, it was about Boeing, but it was not pertaining to the workplace racism. It was about the planes crashing and whether or not they have faulty devices and, you know, all that that's been going on. We have not discussed that on the program. I didn't even bring it up for that reason. I brought it up for the Black people that were struggling there and having nooses and being called niggers as well and everything that they reported. That's why I brought it up. So we haven't discussed that portion on the program.
Okay. just some context about the, so what happened is they laid off a bunch of people and they sent their, and they gave the software engineering jobs to people in India. So instead of, you know, and there were a lot of, you know, there were black people in that area too. So instead of just paying people decent wages, they decided to contract out critical engineering jobs for $9 an hour in India. And then, you know, it ended up with the planes crashing in Ethiopia. And the first thing, you know, they did, they tried to blame it on the pilots. They said, oh, the pilots weren't trained properly. You know, Ethiopian Airlines, they're not ran properly. They don't know what they're doing. They have bad safety records. But it turns out they have great safety records. You know, they're partnered up with the European airliners. So it wasn't that the pilots were properly trained, improperly trained. It's just Boeing just made a faulty system. And then they sold it to a lot of non-white countries. You know, Nigeria has the same planes. They have like 100 of those same planes, and those problems are going to be there. You know, they're going to blame it on the black pilots. And, you know, that's just something to just watch out for. Because, you know, I work in a similar industry, and, you know, I deal with the same racism. And even on the point of the black employees, like this past week, I was trying to get an assignment out, and in the assignment, a lot of things have been changing about the specifications of of some repairs. And I was trying to argue and give to my manager, I was trying to argue down some points because they wanted me to add like a bunch of paragraphs. And this is stuff that was supposed to have been done last week, but last minute they just keep adding more and more that I need to do for this repair on this aircraft for this assignment. So, you know, and everyone keeps asking, when is it going to be due? When is it going to be due? I'm trying to explain that, you know, every time I give it to you all, you guys want to add something else, right? And this isn't even my project. They asked me to help. So they didn't even give me like the full, all the tools I needed to even get it done, because they had no idea what they wanted done. So, and I'm asking them, hey, can we take this, and this out? Because I already talked about it here, and it'd be redundant, and we're wasting time, and it needs to go out. He starts yelling at me. He snatches the paper from my hand. You know, we're in a cubicle environment. It's like 100 cubicles, and anybody can hear anything. He just starts yelling at me. He's like, he snatches it, and he's like, well, it's all right here. Here, and here. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that, but I already have it in there. We don't need this, and this. And, you know, this white man getting ran, he's yelling at me like, wow. And, you know, I asked him, I said, why are you getting mad? And he was like, well, because it's on the paper. And, you know, I was just like, well, you don't need to get angry like that. And, I said it loud, and, after that incident, I was very angry just because of the way he spoke with me. So I called like the head of engineering for the company. And, you know, I told him, I said, he doesn't need to do that again. He snatched it from me. He yelled at me. So he had a talk. You know, they spoke to him allegedly. And, you know, he's been very chipper lately. So talking to white people in a higher position works. That's pretty much it.
Excellent job being codified when you were confronted with a hostile, suspected racist. That is something that I try to encourage regularly in terms of, you know, keeping our composure, that's really the most important aspect with regards to counter racism. If you don't keep your composure, then the rest of it doesn't really matter. And it's crucial, because frequently it'll be situations like that where they are just being flat out hostile. In my view, that's violence. No, it's not physical violence, but when you have people that are yelling at you in a disparaging manner and talking down to you like that, I think that's violence. We've had enough people who've, you know, described incidents like that where, you know, I've just come to a conclusion about that. But In those instances, it can be really easy to yell back and to make it a big confrontation. That's outstanding. Just, I guess, for details in terms of you said you reported that to more powerful whites. What was your presentation, I guess, around this? Was it I'm curious about the wording that was used when you reported this misconduct.
Oh, right. So what I said, I called him and I said, hey, I need to talk to you about, so-and-so, Joe Black or whatever, right? Or Joe White, right? So, and I said, it's about Joe White. And, I'm having an issue with him because he has a problem with getting angry and yelling. And, he's done this repeatedly. And, today he actually yelled at me very loudly in the office area. He snatched something out of my hand. And, to me, that's unacceptable. I told him that, I didn't feel like I was being treated like a human, and I also said, I think I'm human, but I don't know. And, just the way he treated me, it didn't seem like he was treating me like a human. And, I was very, I was very sad and displeased with his behavior. And, the manager, he was like, oh, my God. He was like, whoa, yeah. He was like, when someone agrees with you, the tone of their voice when they agree with you because they know something bad could happen. He had that tone in his voice. Like there was a sense of urgency that he needed to rectify this. He just agreed, said that's unacceptable. That shouldn't be happening. I will definitely talk to him. He said, cause he is like the division. He's over all of engineering for the company. Right. So he said, cause I skipped over one of like two of the managers and I just spoke straight with him. So I just called him directly. So I bypassed two managers. He said, I will get on the phone today with, the manager, the next line manager, and we will talk with him and we'll handle this completely. And, that was last Friday and I came back Monday and, things seemed a lot different. And, I just said I felt scared. It was unacceptable. I didn't feel like I was being treated like a human. And, he seemed to have gotten the point. So.
Awesome. Always appreciate speaking up. We've had two folks speaking up when incorrect things happen in the workplace, report it. Sometimes you can get some of these problems solved. That's what the whole premise of this broadcast is, neutralizing workplace racism. That's what we're supposed to be inspiring. Finding a more powerful white person in the workplace, a lot of times that can efficiently solve problems. Beautiful illustration. Last Friday, it hasn't even been a week and a holiday week to boot, and problem solved. Tacky racist is a little bit better. Grant, we'll keep that in mind. But the wording, that's why I said I was curious about the wording. This is not acceptable. I don't feel safe. I think I said that repeatedly last week. That is high on the list in the workplace. When you have these types, that's why I said that this is violence. No, it's not physical violence, but this is a violent, hostile attack. It's unacceptable, and I don't feel safe. Beautiful. Unprofessionals, that's always a great one to throw in, that this is not professional. Is this the sort of environment that we want to work in? Is this conducive to team productivity? Questions that you can ask as well, but brilliant problem resolved. That's what I'm hoping to inspire. And much obliged for the detail of the white supremacy racism with the Boeing plane crashes, because there's so many layers in terms of laying it out, blaming the non-white pilots for the crash, as opposed to we have faulty technology, which then they could again turn around and say, oh, we, it's a contract this out to these non-white Indian workers. But it would again come back to, as you stated, well, we could pay a decent, adequate compensation. Frequently, they'll say fair right there. Adequate, decent, correct compensation for people who are here in the States or wherever else to create the technology that would work properly so we don't have these crashes. Or we can say, nah, we don't want to do that. Boeing right here, headquarters right here in Seattle, Boeing, or even though they have plants, you know, other places. Or we can say, oh, we'll, you know, pitch these jobs to some non-white people and pay them a lot less. And maybe they do it well, maybe they don't. But we saved a lot of money so we can buy shiny new iPhones and all kinds of gadgets and go out and have great holidays for July 4th battle simulations. Lots of Boeing employees in here in the Seattle area who had a great time, bought up all kinds of goodies to jam out for the whole weekend. Let's see. Much obliged, our black male engineer. And again, kudos. Two great illustrations of black self-respect today. The number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. First time caller. And I really appreciate your program. And still learning the ropes about how to call in, sir. And I would like to know, what is your exact email address? Because I try to email you. I wanted to email you some correspondence, and I don't know if I got the email address right. Spelled it right, of course.
Until, UNTIL, justice, JUSTICE, @gmail.com.
Okay. And real quick, I would like to respond to the last caller's actions or his reaction to his very abusive supervisor. And this is something that's worked for me in the past. Doing something like similar to his situation. Normally I say when somebody is yelling at me, I usually take a step back and, you know, respectfully say, are you violating my personal space? And that's simply that most of the time that works for me. They stop, they realize what they're doing. And it's just those simple words. Are you violating my personal space? Why are you violating my personal space? And that really just, they just seem to know. I don't know, because of my size, maybe they know that I won't play around with somebody yelling at me, because that's just not what I'm into. And I will hang up and listen and wait for your response back.
Much obliged, first time caller. So glad you were able to join us and share. I'll look out for your email, untiljustice@gmail.com. And that we are all still learning. So, you know, same boat, bottom of the boat, unfortunately. But yeah, I think it's always to our advantage to already have either specific phrases down, or you already have an idea in terms of how you would respond in these type of situations, because they're so common. Really, that's the same logic I'm using as to why we're reading Emmy. I think she's with us. The Gift of Fear. That's the same logic. Gavin DeBecker. We're in a system of racism, white supremacy. These type of racist incidents are going to happen. So thinking in advance, what would I say? What would I do? What am I going to make sure that I don't say? So already having that there. Are you violating my personal space? Boom, you are. And that's something, like I said, it could take a few minutes. You practice, bam, you're ready to go. That way somebody comes out and they try and do this sort of thing. You already know, I've practiced what to say. I've practiced how I would respond in these type of situations. So it's not, you know, fumbling and being nervous and that sort of thing. You can be much more confident using your voice as a gun, as Emmy said via Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Not Emmy, be in Toronto. Other folks who dialed in. Oh, I can say it while she's here. Congrats. Great work with the MCAT. I think I mentioned it on the compensatory call-in. That is for sure workplace racism there, and all of their exams and pieces of paper that they make you amass. But best of luck. Continue striving to get that doctor. Need more physicians, more folks in the medical industry. God, save us from the coon man. Other folks, if you have comments, questions to share, *61. While folks are getting their comments together, I will see if I can get through our emails. Kizzy's cousin, she wrote in to say, oh, look at there. Firstly, I hope be in Toronto as well. I think it's constructive to frame the ignoring of race soldiers as planned ignoring. It's less passive, which from my perspective is important to maintaining mental well-being and black self-respect. Like Ivy, I've been racially abused by white women on the plantation far worse than by white males. Although both are racist suspects, I've literally been terrorized by white women at every plantation I've ever worked. And where white males have been involved, more often than not, a racist female has been orchestrating the terrorism. Summary of racist activity for the week. Incidentally, I will say that is my conclusion. That is my conclusion. I said that twice for emphasis. That more often than not, racist females are orchestrating the terrorism. That is my summation for white supremacy racism. The orchestrator. Continuing. Number one, I previously reported I had left a personal letter on the copier at work. I remember that. Left a personal letter on the copier at work and that I suspected the saboteur had seen it, and she made a point of asking me where I lived in front of the other race soldiers in the team. I gave her a response, which was not anywhere near the address on the letter, knowing full well she was trying to test me. I did not care if she determined I was lying or telling the truth. This week, we were on our way to a meeting, so it was difficult to avoid some small talk. The meeting was in the same borough where I live. The saboteur decided to ask me if I had ever been to the area, testing me to see how I would respond. I replied, yes, I've been there before, and said no more. She then asked me if I had a garden. I replied, alas, and said no more. That brought her questions to a close. That also, I think, is an important skill. A lot of these things are, I guess it's a skill, but some of this is just being mindful, being aware of yourself, that I think a lot of times when speaking, workplace situations, I think speaking period, especially if someone has asked you a question, the tendency, almost the reflex answer, feel like you have to say something, and sometimes to talk for quite a bit. Concise. Efficiency with words, that you're not just talking, and particularly talking about yourself unnecessarily and giving out unnecessary information. Yes, I've been here before. You don't have to give a full report. You don't have to tell every shop that you visited. You don't have to tell how it is that you've been here. Oh, yeah, I've been here before. We used to live here and out. Yep, I've been here before. If you want to add anything, I'm always a fan. If you know that you are with a suspected racist and they like to try to get information from you, asking a lot of questions, you answer the question and then bam, you have a ready fire question back. Sometimes you can ask the same question or you have a totally different question. I always like the redirect as well to totally change topics if you think that they're just going to batter you with a whole lot of questions and try to pry into your life. Totally different subject matter. Do you think they're going to have lunch here? And I like to bring it back to workplace. If they're just talking something totally that's not related to our job, bring it back to workplace completely. Totally change of venue, change of thinking, and see if we can redirect that completely. It's compensatory conversation control. Number two. Something told me she had already carried out research, so already had the full speculation of the property where I live and probably knows that I own it. My suspicions were pretty much confirmed later in the week when I overheard a conversation she was having. The race soldier male who reports to her was talking about his holiday plans. He then went on to say that he was moving home as he had recently purchased a new house with his non-white male partner. Double whammy. She then asked him a series of questions about the property, then stunned me by asking him to show her pictures of his house when they get back to their desks. This pretty much confirmed to me that she had undertaken reconnaissance of my home. Not to be surprised. Number three, I reported I offered to help a non-white female apply for other jobs at the company we work as her temporary contract is coming to an end. Not sure when, but it must be soon. At the time, I was aware there were race soldiers in earshot, one who is in her team. She and I were both attempting to be codified, but she is confused, so she said more than I did. Echo just said, now, you can consider that a skill. In my view, it's just being mindful. What are you saying? Am I just talking and talking and talking? Why am I just talking and talking and talking in the workplace? This is not the time to be loquacious. You want to be efficient. That is the word. I want to use as few words as possible. Again, it's not saying that, you know, you need to be mute. It's not saying that you have to be silent, but there's no need to share unnecessary information. There is no need to be running off at the mouth. Say what is needed and not one syllable extra. Since then, she has been somewhat distant. She had mentioned her contract situation within the context of wanting to meet other non-white people in the organization through the Black Staff Network. I remember that. I gave her some information, but did not go into a lot of detail. I did not want things to be awkward, so the following week, I made a point of letting her know that I was fine if she did not want my help with her applications. She said she did, but never approached me, which I am okay with. However, I'm questioning her motive for raising the matter with me in the first place, and or what may have been said to her by race soldiers. I will heed Mr. Williams' advice from this point. Do not give advice unless it's requested. That would be Mr. Edward Williams, founder of the Counter-Racism Network. Counter-racism.com. Check it out. He's been guest on the program many times. I remember, I think, one of the first times I spoke to Mr. Williams, and I think this was like live on air. This was like context of white supremacy 2007. We were on the University of Washington's radio station at the time. We were talking to him, I think, on air, and I used the word help, and he said, oh, be careful with that word help. Man, oh, man, I've seen a whole lot of conflicts go down where someone says, I'm just trying to help. He said, generally, people will ask if they need help, and then you can, you need help? What do you need help with? Let's see if I can assist. It goes great when you're trying to offer help and people don't want it. Oh, man. And in the workplace context, it's so toxic. That's why I say before, some people just take the rule. Hey, united, independent, and I am not doing any of that. That there are too many victims of white supremacy because they're subject. Race soldiers use them to abuse and mistreat other non-white people. So I'm not getting involved with any of that to jeopardize my situation or even cause me any stress. Logic. What can I say? There are, however, a lot of Cal's listeners who do try to do the same thing as Kizzy's cousin to help out when they can. And I think that is the kind of concluding thoughts that she had around this in terms of, number one, hey, if she does not approach me about this, maybe a race soldier said something to her to discourage her from communicating with me or wanting to, you know, do too much assisting, that sort of thing. No problem. Excuse me, had to sneeze. Nothing to take personal, not to be surprised about. We keep it pushing and not to even hold it against her. She's a victim of racism just like you are. We keep it moving. If she does come back and ask for help, hey, no problem. I'll try to help as best I can. And keep it in mind, whatever I say, other people are listening and or she could be reporting to others. So you're just mindful of all of that. You try to do the best you can for yourself. People that try to help out others, you do so. But if they don't want the help or something changes, being prepared for that too, and without any judgment or malice. That's the system of white supremacy. Let's see. I guess it was maybe being suspicious about why this was raised in the first place. That is sound. I can understand why one might have some concerns or questions about what was the motivation for this to begin with. Race Soldier could have put her up to this, as they say, as well. Finally, Ivy asked about a broadcast with Dr. Welsing. I believe the program she's looking for was on the 12th of April, 2015. Ivy just asked about that last week. I told her I thought it would have been one of the last set of programs where Dr. Welsing was with us, but I couldn't nail down a specific date. There you go. April 12, 2015. Much obliged, Kizzy's cousin. Let's see. Other folks, if you dialed in, have comments, questions, if you have responses to any of the listeners, if we have any listeners that are in the California area, I would be curious to hear your thoughts about the Crown Act. That's the enforcement or the legislation that Governor Newsom passed this week that's supposed to prohibit mistreatment of black people who have natural hair in a workplace setting. If folks who live in the California area, if you think this is going to be enforced, if you think this is really going to be like, wow, super beneficial for me and other, you know, black people in the state of California, I would be curious to hear that. And if this is supposed to include black males, as I said, most or nearly all of the reports, except for one that I've seen, it's been exclusively focused on black females. So I am curious if folks think this is going to also apply to black males and or black males out there. If hair has been an issue for you in the workplace, unless folks think I'm crazy, if any folks would like to substantiate, yes, this has come up as a problem for black males as well. Feel free. Other folks, if we've missed you totally, proceed.
Can you hear me?
Greetings, Jay in St. Louis. Yes, sir.
I wanted to share some thoughts, but I also wanted to ask a question. Did the corporal give an update this week? I heard the archives from last week. And the great information that was given to that individual. I just wondered if they reached back out.
For sure. Good memory. The corporal he's referencing, this is a non-white male. He's written in, I think, for a few weeks now with the situation in the armed services where he had a racist sergeant. And he was trying to deal with that. He also works for the post office. Lots of government positions. Works for the post office where he was dealing with racism there. I did not get an update from him this week, so we'll have to be mindful to see if he gives us what's new on both fronts, the post office and with the racist sergeant.
Okay. I just wanted to check.
That's a calendar,
And then I wanted to also share. Oh, really?
Yes, he is with a white woman, unfortunately.
Important to know. I also wanted to share about my government job. So I think I've been holding this in for a while. I think I was, I told you, I shared last time about the guards who sit at the front of the building who speak in kind of aggressive language when referencing the customers we serve, talking about getting ready to rumble all of the time. You know, walking around with guns and proclaiming things at people. However, I also shared that the way the job hired me was very deceptive, in that upon my initial meeting with the district manager, that my salary could not be negotiated, that this was the salary and, you know, government salaries cannot be negotiated. That was what I was told the third week upon working there, which was approximately April 25th. I had a meeting last Monday with the district manager, and I was informed that my not only that, my mentor, who was teaching me things on the job, who was a non-white black male, is now changed to a white woman, but also that the salary can be changed, in fact, and that is actually up to the district manager whether or not I will actually be hired in the position that was initially advertised to me upon further inspection through this new white woman mentor. So I'm really contemplating and thinking about that a lot, and I wanted to get your thoughts about that. To me, I interpreted that as a very deceptive practice, kind of carrot and stick thing, moving the goalposts is a metaphor that people would use to, that I kind of use to describe it. But I was wondering what you all, or if there was any thoughts about that. I also thought it was very interesting that me and the non-white black mentor, the fact that we would go to lunch sometimes and people would see us walking around together, I think it made them want to split us up or not want us to be working together and things like that. And it was very, it was almost unprofessional the way things went down. I actually, he trained me in a number of things. And one of the things he trained me in, I earned some kind of formal certificate for that was supposed to be presented to me in a formal setting, just found it on my desk one morning when I walked in on a Tuesday. It was just laying right there. So that was all I wanted to share, and I'll listen.
Woo, that is extra super tacky. Not that, you know, we should all be sitting around marking days off the calendar. I missed her. Marking days off the calendar until we get, you know, our shindig. I don't know if it's because that sometimes that celebration, it'll be, oh, we have a nice shiny plaque for you, Mr. J in St. Louis, and it'll be Donut Day in J in St. Louis's honor, or maybe we'll do chitlins. Like, that whole thing can get tacky as well. Or they forget your name. I think our caller in Florida can testify to that one. All of those ceremonies have a way of getting niggerized as well, but be that as it may, like if it's supposed to be a ceremony and you get a glass of orange juice and your photograph and all of that, and just put it on the nigger's desk. Wow. Like, all righty. Talk about almost unprofessional. Right on. And that, again, I have said consistently, do not expect, because it happens to so many people. Mr. Fuller said this as well. He used to be confused about racism. That's the way he explained it. And thinking, hey, all I have to do is show up, be brilliant. I'm going to do my job. I'm competent. I'm not lazy. I'm going to be on time every day. If I come in here and do that, hey, they will do right by me. Wrong. So many black people have ended up having all kinds of stress. And I mean serious stress around that. Like, I don't understand. I show up every day. I work hard. I've been getting great reviews. I'm doing quality work. And they treat me, call me a nigger. They just threw my plaque like I don't. System of racism, white supremacy. You being a competent nigger, you're just a competent nigger. That's it. Maybe we'll keep you around. Maybe we don't. Maybe we throw your plaque on the desk. Maybe we come in tomorrow. You don't even have a desk. You're out of here, nigger. As for the second, that gets right to the second component and right back to the white woman. Discretion. I agree with your assessment completely. I think you have it figured 100% in terms of just lying. That's what it is. That is deception to tell you one thing, and then they come back the next week or, you know, a month later and, oh, no, it's going to be, you know, something totally different. And we've had that from a number of listeners. We had one male who came in, and particularly around salaries, to say, oh, yeah, we're going to come in and hire you at $60,000. And then you come in and get the job and say, oh, no, your salary is going to be $20,000. I don't know where the $60,000 came from. That was ludicrous. Yeah. Lots of times where they'll say things or suggest things, whatever, then totally change it around. Like, oh, no, your salary is going to be this and there's no negotiation. And then come back. Oh, actually, there can be discretion for the salary. And it'll be up to this white woman to decide just exactly how many nickels we give you. Good luck. I think as well as your assessment, equally important about you have a white woman now as your mentor, that term we've talked about before, not using it, but your quote unquote mentor. Before you had this non-white male where you all had a constructive relationship, you're earning certificates and being recognized for doing high quality, competent work. Exactly what I said previously. They're not interested in seeing that. And we've had a whole lot of black people testify to that one as well. Black males, black females, non-white people, period. When they were on a job, and especially if they had a constructive relationship with other non-white people, I think Red in Nevada said she was working with other black females in a workplace capacity. They got along well, were doing great work. They came in after a few days and everybody had been moved. They split the whole group up, moved them, put them on different floors and everything. They're not interested in seeing that in the workplace. If we were bickering, if you and that non-white mentor that you had, or quote unquote mentor that you had previously, if you all were quarreling and bickering and didn't get along, oh man, oh, this is great. This is entertainment for the whole lot. Great. But you all are getting along well. And as you said, he taught you a lot of things. You learned a whole lot of things. Like, wow, this is great for my career. I think your assessment is spot on, and that is fits a consistent pattern in the system of racism, white supremacy, unless I am in error. If other folks, if you have an assessment of what we just heard, Jay in St. Louis, his situation, I guess real quick, I'll also get in. The language being used, I think we've had some other callers who talked about coworkers on their job where they serve black clients. Black people are going to be patronizing their establishment. That's who's the traffic is going to be from. A lot of black people are non-white people. And these individuals who are in positions of power, where they're using language like it's violent, aggressive, like I'm ready to rumble, we're ready to get that. Like, wow, that's the way that you think about, you know, you, I mean, they say that, I think I mentioned that before, they say that at fights, like that's the way that you're thinking of dealing with these black clients. That's what they're supposed to be, not opponents, not people that you're ready to rumble with, I'm ready to fight with. Yes, bring on the Negroes. I mean, wow, like, pay attention to that sort of language being used in a workplace. That right there can let you know a lot about the people that you're working with. Other folks who dialed in, if we have any folks who have any thoughts on Jay in St. Louis, his situation, we can share that. And if folks have their own situation or suggestions, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Emmy. Congrats again on nailing the MCAT.
Thank you very much, guys. Greetings, everyone. I don't have any other comments for the previous caller's situation other than I think his assessment was spot on as well. And I was, when you said y'all two would go to lunch together, and you know, all day I've been thinking about how much we are watched and how oblivious we are to how much we're watched, down to some of the most, what we would consider trivial aspects of maybe our personality. Maybe if there's a certain intonation that we take, maybe we blink too hard, maybe our clothes, down to little things like that. Like, and people who are classified as white are so scrupulous, they'd be able to determine whether or not you had real diamonds versus cubic zirconium stud in your left ear. You know, so to see two black men or two black males or whatnot walking cordially, having lunch together, is enough to want to ruin it. So that image, that definitely stood out, because sometimes I don't know if we pay as much attention to being watched as much as the attention is given to us to watch us. Should I wait so that other people can comment, or could I proceed?
Proceed.
Thank you very much. It's been a while, I've missed you all terribly. I'll give you just like a couple quick things. Because school kind of took over, I've been at work. I've been working, but not like so much. But every time I go, some person classified as white wants to practice racism against me. Time got tight towards like the end of the semester and then preparing to take the exam. So I had to study everywhere. And I am super, super adamant about not reading while I'm at work. Even on a phone, it could be dangerous because there's cameras all over the place. They can like snapshot you, zoom in on what you're reading. So unless I'm reading something like totally passive, non-related to anything I'm actually passionate about, I choose not to read at work. However, I had to study. This particular time, I'm in with a patient. My particular code, I do my best job when I step in to my job. That's my code. I get paid. I agree to do the job. I do the best job, and I'm serious about what I do. So I get in there, and that's one thing that, like, no matter who, they always comment, like, they know that. So I'm all about my patient care, all about that stuff. But if a person is knocked out because, you know, they gave them drugs or whatever it is, I had to study. So here I have my MCAT book, and I got to study. And I have to, like, I get to take a break. So I have a book bag. When, no matter what the break is, I put everything up. So book in the bag, water bottle in the bag, you know. Every now and then, I'll even take the bag. This particular time, I did not. I still experiment with people who are classified as white. This was one of those particular times. Because this particular Urugu male, when he saw me studying, he wanted to engage in conversation. Because I knew I was going to have that book inside of a hospital, I knew that it could potentially cause conversation. So I'd already determined that what I was going to say is, I'm just perusing to see what kind of stuff they would test. I know some people have different codes in terms of whether they say the truth all the time or not. I personally practice shape-shifting, which is something I'll talk about too, because I have to be in very different environments interacting with a bunch of different people. So I shape-shift. This is one of those times. So it means like, it's kind of true, maybe, depending what shape I'm in. Anyway, so yeah, I had to use the bathroom, put the book away, go to the bathroom. I could sense, and yes, I have been reading The Gift of Fear, but I put it down. I didn't know y'all started it until the day when I was exercising. I was like, let me check that again. I'm so excited. Anyway, my animal in me was like, wait a minute. He went in my book bag. Sure enough, I walk around the corner. This Urugu has my book. I was already so ready that I had taken the deep inhale that it would take for me to make sure that I remained professional. And I said, I knew you went into my bag and got my book. Do not ever go into my things again. And that was that. From then on, I could have had tea, coffee, as many bathroom breaks. None of that mattered to me, except that my experiment confirmed what I knew to be true. Do not leave anything you don't want a Urugu to see anywhere, whether you're at work or any other place, sit your bags, sit your books, whatever. If you do not want them to see it, do not leave it. Moving on. I have locks. I'm locked. And I work with people who, not all the time, but sometimes can engage in aggressive behavior, become violent. Not only that, I live in an area predominantly white. So I refuse, my hair will not be a topic of conversation. So, and hospitals are dirty. So anyway, I got on Amazon, come to find out they have reusable scrub caps. Whoa, how amazing. So I purchased one as an experiment to see how it would go. I love it because I push the hair in there and I go about my business in a hospital. It's a part, I wear scrubs, so it completely fits my uniform. This particular day, I'm not in the hospital, though. I am in, like, personal care and kind of, like, one of those, like, retirement facilities. So it's a step before the hospital. And I walk into, like, the dining room area. So I have to escort this woman, this Urugu woman. And actually, let's back up. I do my job. So if it is in my outlined responsibilities of care, I do my job. With that being said, with the confidence I say that, if it is not in my list of duties, I do not do that. This particular Yoruba woman wanted me to do everything, even put on makeup. That is not in my list of duties. I'm glad to hand you your makeup, but we're not doing that. If you need that kind of care, you need to speak to these people and have them add that to the list. She even snapped at me, but it's okay. We're going to move forward. So I'm escorting her to the dining room. And she even waves me off. Now, by law, I'm not supposed to leave because it's like a hands-on, one-on-one thing. She falls to break her neck. It's my fault. Anyway, so I walk in, and this, like, peppery white old woman is like, you can take your nightcap off. I looked at her with the class that I have, and I said, it is not a nightcap. It's a scrub cap. It is designed for an environment like this, and kept it moving. So one of the things I've been practicing is what I find to be frustrating for Yorubas is class, elegance, grace, sophistication, any of those things. No, like, nonsense, like, so above it, you know, that you just don't even entertain it whatsoever. There's nothing to say. There's nothing to really even confront. I just address and keep it moving. So that was one thing. Let's see. Then there was a time with, like, we'll talk about the test. So there's so many things for the test. Like, you have to get a palm scan. They got to take your picture, take your ID, put your things in a locker, take out your food. It can be, you know, and I wanted to make sure I asked all the questions. If you violate any of these things, they will put you up for violation, cancel your scores, and investigate you. You're filmed the entire time you're taking the exam. Every time you go to the restroom, you have to take your ID, raise your hand, all of these things, right? So I made sure to ask all of my questions because I really don't want any issues. They said, take your food, sit it in front of your bag. I said, okay, put it in my locker, take my lunchbox, put it in front of my bag. It's, you know, I'm getting through the exam. It's lunchtime. I'm ready to eat. Grab the thing, do everything the right way. I'm sitting there eating. I come back in and I'm just doing the same thing. Now, mind you, it's quite a few of us. Some of them with the big old camper book bags, like everybody has a lunchbox. You know what I mean? Like, we packed food. We're here for the day. So a non-white woman, classified as Black, she's like, ma'am, and we're already anxious. So I'm like, what's going on, you know? And she's like, is that a purse? I'm just like, no, it's a lunchbox. Like, it's full of food. I just finished eating. And she goes through this whole rundown about how, you know, violation this and violation that, and how I'm supposed to take everything out of my lunchbox. And I'm not allowed to have a bag at all. Meanwhile, everyone around me has a lunch bag, like some of them more intricate than my own. But it's cool. It's okay. Whatever. I was ready to finish the exam. But I thought about that, you know, just already the anxiety of the environment and the potential conflict that there could be between her and I. But I'm not entertaining that. I'm here to do what I'm here to do. Whatever. I already ate. What you want to see? So at that point, I just asked, can I get my chapstick out? Can I get my lens, you know, container out, like hands up on the camera? It's a lip gloss, you know, that type of thing. Because you work too hard for something like that to like steer you off. So thank you very much for, you know, giving me a shout out. I didn't hear the other one, but thank you for this one. And I wanted to say that, like, another thing is, I wasn't sure if I was going to say it on this one because it seems like this broadcast, a lot of people were like, I'm speaking up. I'm such a huge proponent for being quiet, though, too. I just wanted to put that out there just because sometimes they don't deserve a response. I mean, like, there's just nothing to say, you know? It's like you experience it one time, move on, and that's okay, especially if you're not, like, well-versed in your codification quite yet. Like, it doesn't make you weak if you don't respond. And, it, you know, like, get rid of that feeling. Just accept that you got to learn and keep practicing. The final thing is the shape-shifting, just because I think that's important too. Like, if you work in a cubicle environment, then you have, like, a cubicle shape, so to speak, as to how you're going to interact with those people. Me, I have different clients, like, every day. So some days, depending on the client, I fill them out. We don't need to talk at all. But some of them do. I already
have pre-programmed things that I in my repertoire that I can pull out and seem as though I'm totally engaging, totally friendly. Meanwhile, in the back of me, I'm running experiments and taking notes. And so it takes practice, but I would encourage people to have that too. Like, maybe it's not in your nature to be quiet and you really want to be friendly, but you now understand that you cannot. Pick and choose the things that you would talk about if you had to talk about, and know the things not to talk about, so that you figure out how best to, you know, continue living and continue working in your environment, if that makes sense. Because sometimes I want to talk, but I'll sit and talk about like something that has nothing to do with how I really feel. And this white person thinks I am the sweetest thing as pie, you know? And then I get through my shift and we're good, we're golden, or we're good to go and I can move on. But those are just a couple things that have worked for me. Hopefully it works for y'all, and I really appreciate y'all listening to me. Thanks.
Much obliged, Emmy. Experimentation in the workplace. Counter-racist experimentation in the workplace. Love it. And I think Dr. Welsing would appreciate that. Fellow physician, attempted counter-racist scientist, experimenting. We come to conclusions, some of us at least on some things, come to conclusions, and you test things out. Let's see. See if I'm right or not. Love it. With the bag and the suspected racist rifling through your bag, we've talked about that so much in the workplace context, in terms of just no expectation of privacy, that we're constantly under surveillance, and definitely like underline, highlight, boldface print Emmy's comments about us just not recognizing how closely we are watched. Like, man, in the workplace, we just, I don't think we can grasp individuals who have dedicated themselves to dominating us forever. We are super, super, super watched, surveilled, under magnification. I mean, that is their full-time job. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. But keep that in mind when you have whatever items you, you know, are taking with you into whatever the environment is, workplace, school setting, whatever. We talked about that. If you have a briefcase, a backpack, anything that you take with you into your work environment, I would not want anything there that you are not comfortable with race soldiers knowing about. I think Kizzy's cousin gave the report where she left the piece of information on the copier, and this other racist white woman rifled through her personal information and then has come back to confirm and do reconnaissance on the information that she got from the document. That is no surprise. I've had individuals that I know, like on a personal level, who are not concerned about counter-racism at all. Like, that is not, they don't give a hoot. Like, they have totally different victims of racism, but you know, hey. However, for these individuals, racism became a problem for them. I said, hey, there's this fellow, Mr. Fuller. He's pretty good. You can ask him a few questions and see if he can help. Called Mr. Fuller. Mr. Fuller, as he's done many times over the years, he sends her some books for free. Unfortunately, she has them sent to her job. Package gets there and they notify her that she has a package, but tell her that unfortunately it looks like rats got into the package and it was opened when it got here. As I said, she has zero interest in counter-racism. Even she found that explanation sorely lacking. Suspicious. That is white people. We are under extraordinary, man. I mean, that package would be the one that the rats got into with the codified books from Neely Fuller Jr. That would be the one that the rats got into. Like, wow, not any of the other nonsense that comes from Amazon or wherever. Just those books. Reading black people. Oh, wow. Big time. We've had so many people who've talked about having whatever the book, it wasn't necessarily even a book that they were using to train to become, you know, the best new physician ever. Just any old book. Like, what? This nigger is actually reading. What is this nigger reading? tons of people. We've talked about that. I've talked about definitely making sure your security is up, especially if it's a book that you think that it might be. What is this nigga doing with medical apartheid? What is this nigga doing with the ISIS papers? That type of literature. Oh, yeah. Think twice, have a strong code. The portion with the exam. Wow. Just that type of scrutiny alone. Chapstick. I guess, you know, it is almost 2020, so maybe you could have some newfangled chapstick that's got exam answers maybe printed on the inside of the chapstick cap, or maybe it's actually printed on the chapstick itself as you use the tube. I don't know, but talk about under surveillance. Wow. And just thinking about that, I think they have reports where just if the test taker is made aware of their racial classification before the exam, that black people do worse. They, I think, have reports that have shown this, experiments that they've conducted. Imagine that. You're in that sort of environment. And what is that? Is that a bag? Chapstick? Where did you get that chap? I mean, Jesus. And just, I appreciated, this is what I expected, and I wanted to know all the rules. Worked too hard to get this close and then have some nonsense mess it up because I had, you know, an apple wedge out for a snack or what have you, so that I could be nourished as I passed this exam. Like, wow. Standard operating procedure. And I definitely appreciated the mention that not speaking up does not make you weak. Definitely appreciated. I think a big part of Mr. Fuller's counter-racist code is that you can choose. Maybe today I'll exercise counter-racism and I'll choose to do something, say something. Maybe tomorrow I choose that I'm not. That's also VGQ, and that's also a part of the code. So if you choose not to speak up just because you don't know what to say, that's fine. You choose not to speak up because it's just not that day. You're not feeling it for whatever reason. You just want to observe, perhaps, experiment, see what happens if you don't say something. All of that is great. Or any other reasons? We're all victims of racism, just figuring out the best way to respond as best we can. And each situation is going to greatly impact how we respond. You might have, you know, seven different responses for the same incident. That is also a part of counter-racist codification and can be helpful. Then race soldiers can't say you are predictable, not really sure what you're going to do. Context of white supremacy, much obliged, Emmy. Other folks, if you have questions, comments, suggestions, the number to dial 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I can get in one comment myself before we check in with other folks, particularly if you have folks that we missed totally. I am teaching yoga in the park on Monday. I'm excited too. It's supposed to be encouraging black people, non-white people, to come participate. I think all the instructors that I'm doing this project is supposed to go on for the summer. I guess if you're in the Seattle area or think you're going to be in the Seattle area for the summer and you want to come and do yoga in the park with Gus, let me know. And we'll be doing yoga in the park for, I don't know, through August. I'll be there Monday for 3 hours, Monday afternoon. I think they have free lunch, I think. And we're doing yoga in the park. I think we even have yoga mats. So you can come practice. Should be fun. I am bringing this up as workplace racism because we are using the opportunity to not only encourage other non-white people to participate in yoga, get a little exercise, do some self-care, but also to promote non-white instructors. I tried to reach out to all the non-white people that I know who are teachers to see if I could get a list of non-white instructors to recommend so that I would not have to go and say, oh, go to this studio or that studio or whatever white-owned studio. I can say, this is non-white instructor, email contact information, bang, email contact information, and or me if you would, you know, like a different instructor, but to be able to promote other black people, non-white people who practice, teach yoga, loving it, working with other black and non-white people, instructors doing the project, and hoping it will be grand. There are certainly whites involved at the park. We've already met some of them. I did ask a lot of questions to try to minimize problems in advance, and the whites that are present should be there to assist. We are just there to do the yoga, nothing else, and they are supposed to facilitate making that happen, not coming in to take over or tell us what to do or anything like that. So I am hoping it's supposed to be sunny. It has been like frigid. If they were doing that, if we were teaching this week, I would not be excited because it has been downright chilly. I'm not sure if it got above 70 degrees in Seattle today. Yesterday, it was probably right at the 70 mark, and it was kind of in fact, I know it was not 70 by the time the fireworks started yesterday evening because I did not want to go back on the rooftop to even watch. We were outside at like 6 and it was nippy. So, yeah. But anyway, it's supposed to be sunny. So I'm hoping we can get great time in the sun, can share yoga with other non-white people, and will have no interference disruptions from whites at all. That is the goal. I will be prepared. I had already thought in advance because I was thinking, what if there are problems and blah, blah, blah. Like, we're at a public park. So, you know, it's a lot of variables, could be a lot of people and that sort of thing. I was already trying to think of those type of scenarios in advance. And as I said, the park employees who are present and volunteer staff, they're all supposed to be at our beck and call. So all we have to do is, hey, person right here is causing a problem. Could you escort this child back to their parent or whatever it is, but we're just doing the yoga, nothing else. I'll report back after Monday how things go. We're supposed to have, I think, 3 days where I'll share as we roll through the summer, as I'm picking out the different days where I'm teaching, if folks want to come do yoga in the park with Gus. And I'll report back how it goes. I do plan to wear my counter-racist shirt to one of the events. Please treat me like a white person. I do plan on wearing it to at least one of the events during the time. I'll let you know how that goes as well. Other folks, if you have questions, comments, if we have any folks in California, the hair legislation, Crown Act, thoughts on that and its enforcement in particular, folks have thoughts on that, or if we have any folks that we have not heard from at all, proceed.
Gus.
Stacy in the UK, our obligatory timestamp, it is 3:02 a.m. Saturday morning, July 6, London time. Always lovely to hear from Stacy.
Hello to you, Gus, and to the rest of the callers. I wanted to pick up on something. I think it was Draptomania said last week she was reporting on a documentary about a non-white male who grew up in an area and he had been murdered. And I think you referenced Stephen Lawrence, but the actual young boy who was 10 years old who died, he actually was, it was someone called Damilola Taylor, and he had been killed in the stairwell. He was stabbed. Now, it got a lot of media attention in the UK, not, I guess, in part because he was 10 years old, so very young, but also, the Stephen Lawrence, the issue around the males who, the racist males who had stabbed him to death, was still very much in the forefront of the media at that time, because I think it was pre them actually being recharged for murder. And I mean, it's a case that still gets a lot of attention anyway. So again, that caused a lot of attention. Now, at the time, I think in the early days, it was suspected that it may have also been a racial, racist suspects who had stabbed him. But it actually turned out to be non-white males who were charged and imprisoned. And they also were quite young. I think, I can't remember the ages, but, they were in their teens. Now, at the time, I was aware of the murder. So this was quite a while after Stephen Lawrence had died. Stephen Lawrence had died in the 90s. But it was around maybe 2000, 2001, that Damilola Taylor had been stabbed. And I was aware of the stabbing. As I said, it was a national... It made national headlines. But at that point, I hadn't been following the detail of the case in terms of the criminal investigation. And I remember being at work, and there's this racist female who used to work in the office where I was employed. And I remember her in the office talking about the child and saying, "Poor Damilola, what about what's happened to him? It's so sad, it's so terrible." And as I was very sure she was a racist, I thought, this is very, very suspect, because there's absolutely no way she could give a damn about the life or death of a non-white child. So then I looked it up, and then I got into the detail of where it was in terms of the actual investigation. And obviously there were non-white males being, they were considered suspects at that point. And I just concluded, okay, so this isn't her being concerned about the child. This is because of, and where I worked actually included the area where Stephen Lawrence had been killed. And to this day, I'm sure there are many race soldiers in the area who are very, you interviewed Doreen Lawrence, so you will know that she the projects that she runs in the name of her son is continuously vandalized. So, there's absolutely no way that this female could give a damn about that child or any non-white person who's been stabbed, no matter what, the circumstances of the how they were killed. And I think it was just a way of her indirectly saying, well, it's not just these white males who kill black children, that there are black people out there killing other black people. So my conclusion was that she was practicing racism. And I will mute my line there, Gus.
Much obliged. I think Draftomania is listening. She'll appreciate getting the accurate name for the victim. And I would agree with the synopsis she presented in terms of that seems like that same black-on-black crime trope that gets presented here in the States, where if there is focus on racism being practiced, white people mistreating non-white people, somehow it'll get switched to, black people shoot and kill a whole lot of black people every day. And look at Chicago. That would be instant. Got to get a mention in for Chicago. See there? Obama. What did Obama do about that? He cared about black people. He lived there, all that. Yeah. But excellent, and obviously not. I think every time that's mentioned, it is not because they have any concern for the black people or black people who have been harmed by other black people. It is totally a tool to deflect from white people being to blame and the master perpetrators, abusers of black people worldwide, known universe. Much obliged, Stacy in the UK. Other folks dialed in, any other questions, comments, suggestions, Still curious thoughts if the enforcement of the Crown Act, if folks have any thoughts about that. I'm having a hard time conceptualizing whom would be going out to, you know, do the punitive act, the punitive enforcement of, wait a minute, you know, you did not give her that promotion. You didn't give her that job because, you know, she's got locks, or you didn't give him that job because he's got cornrows, and, you know, that's going to be a fine, and, you know, give him that job, give her that promotion. Like, really? Is that how, or maybe that's not even how it works. I don't know. Like, the enforcement may, if anybody knows, has more details about how this is going to be enforced, that would be grand too.
Can I make a brief comment about that?
Yes, ma'am. This is Emmy.
I don't think it's meant to be enforced. I think it's just meant to propagate more of what's viewed as our whining and complaining. I looked into it. I think if Black males were going to use that thing at all, that new law or bill that's been passed, it's only because I think she mentions Black men and women in like a sentence. So I guess if there was a Black male who wanted to use it, he could say, well, she did say it in this interview at this time, Black men and Black women. But otherwise, I don't think it's meant to be enforced. I think those who are classified as white, actually, it's not that I think it. I think there's just enough evidence to suggest that they really enjoy watching our suffering in so many different ways and saying that we're whining, complaining. So I think this thing is just one of those things that now we'll feel like we can, quote unquote, whine and complain more. Thank you all for listening.
But they got, you know, the governor signed this in the law. You know, this is not just a proclamation or an apology. Like, you know, there's supposed to be official legislation. You think this is just, this will prompt more Black people to whine that they didn't get a job or this happened to them because of their hair and nothing will be done about it. And we'll just get to sit around and giggle as they whimper about racism.
Yes, because there is nothing on the books to say how it would be enforced. Anything that's meant when those who are classified as white actually want to get something done, it's on the books on how they intend to get it done. Otherwise, it's just verbiage. And as far as I could tell, based off of the very skimp research I did tonight on it, there doesn't seem to be any indication that there's anything meant to be done with it. Not right away, at least. And so I think, and also it's like backed by Dove. Elections are coming up, so it's a hot topic, it's a moneymaker, and everything I mentioned before. So even though it's a bill, that this wouldn't be the first bill that was written and passed that wasn't enforced, and we still suffer.
They said similar legislation may be coming to New York as well. It is 2020 election is coming up. Yeah, looks nice. I guess go out and sign that, shore up your base if you're concerned about getting Black voters, non-white voters. I guess that looks cute that you roll out. Absolutely, we'll make sure we're going to support you. I just, the enforcement, I just keep coming back to that. I'll be curious whenever the first case pops up where a Black person says, hey, you know, this happened to me in a workplace setting. I have natural hair and, you know, I think that's the reason. Like, what's going to happen? Like, who speaks up? Like, who comes to the rescue? We got the Crown Act. No. Like, I will be very curious in California. If anybody hears of such cases, please let me know. Other folks who dialed in, if you have questions, comments, proceed.
Gus.
Stacy in the UK.
Hi, can I just comment on Jane St. Louis's situation? Ultimately, he will need to decide what to do. Now, race soldiers do like to have fun torturing non-white people, so it may be the case that even though they are instituting new hurdles for him to clear, it may be the case that, you know, they have every intention of keeping him in the role and potentially increasing his salary at some point. However, I would keep my options open and start looking for other jobs, because A, you just don't want to be in a position where you're totally reliant on what they will do, but also it's what you want to put up with as well, because the whole thing sounds, well, it's clearly been mistreatment from day one, and they are, if nothing, dishonest. So you may want to consider how long you want to be in that environment anyway. But that's just my opinion. Hopefully it's helpful. I'll make my line, Gus.
Much obliged. That is definitely something, you know, that is important. I think in terms of that assessment, whether the environment is going to be the best for us, understanding, hey, we can relocate, but the racism, white supremacy will still be there. But that is important. Sometimes there can be environments that are less toxic that would be better for our careers. Definitely something, kind of an assessment that we should make of our work situation, I think. Maybe that's something to add to the code, just making an assessment of your workplace environment, your career there. Is this a place that you want to be for the next 5 years? Is this a place that is healthy for you to be even for the next 5 days? Maybe that should be a part of our regular counter-racist code. Make an assessment of our functioning, our health, enjoyment, progress in our workplace. Is this an environment that, you know, I should even remain in? Like, is this going to be good for me to be here? Then doesn't seem like they're going to fire me, you know, in the next 48 hours. And they don't, you know, steal or rob. My compensation is correct. It's as it should be consistently. But even with all of that said, is this environment healthy for me to remain in? Like, just make that appraisal regularly and honestly. And, you know, see what it comes up with. See if it changes. Other folks who dialed in, if you have your own situation or if you have comments on what has been shared, proceed. If we have folks, if we missed you totally, definitely chime in. We have, our last, at most, about last 40 minutes or so. We'll see if folks have additional comments or such, or if folks are excited and ready to get to more hot dogs and hamburgers and all the rest of the jazz.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto.
Yes. First, I wanted to also say thank you to these cousins, and also thank you again for this wonderful platform, Gus, and also congratulations, Emmy, on your recent achievement, and much good fortune in future endeavors. Yes, in regards to the Crown Act, it's really interesting because and a little confusing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the U.S. Supreme Court at one time allowed discrimination? I think this was maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, where they had ruled that companies are allowed to discriminate based on natural hair. I'm paraphrasing now, but the reason why I'm saying I'm a little confused is because if California, I'm not really well versed in American law, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Depending on the states and municipalities and what have you, but if California has enacted a ban against discrimination on hairstyles, and the U.S. Supreme Court is allowing companies to discriminate on hairstyles, then wouldn't the California law be null and void, or at least lack substance?
I'm double checking companies to, I guess, quote unquote, discriminate against black people with natural hair.
I don't recall that specifically.
The only thing that I can recall, I know that like with the services, I remember there was like a case or situation with a woman who had locks or something like that, and she was discharged. But I don't know if it was a Supreme case or not. So no, I'm not familiar with it. But that's an interesting thing if it is, though.
Yeah, I'm trying to look online currently to see if I can locate.
Sorry, can you hear me okay?
Be in Toronto?
Yes. Yes, I'm looking online. It's U.S. Supreme Court decided to ignore black hair discrimination. It's Rewire News that I'm seeing this. Oh, this was as recent as last year. At least that's when the story was posted, saying that black women may continue to be discriminated even though having traditionally black hairstyles has no bearing on the person's fitness for a particular job. Black hair discrimination in the workplace is real, and the U.S. Supreme Court just rejected an opportunity to address it. On Monday, the court refused to consider a lawsuit against Catastrophe Management System, CMS, alleging that Chastity Jones, a black woman, suffered racial discrimination when CMS rescinded a job offer because Jones wouldn't cut off her dreadlocks. The facts of the case outlined in the court documents are this. In 2010, Jones interviewed her customer service representative job at CMS. After being selected from a pool of online applicants, she arrived for the interview wearing her hair in short dreadlocks. After Jones was offered the job, the company's HR manager, Jeannie Wilson, told Jones that CMS could not hire her with the dreadlocks. Here, just to cut it down short, the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, filed a lawsuit on behalf of Jones, alleging that CMS had subjected her to racial discrimination in violation of the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The EEOC argued that race doesn't have a biological definition and is a social construct, and that race is not defined or limited by immutable characteristics. Instead, the EEOC alleged that race can only encompass cultural characteristics related to race or ethnicity, including grooming practices, and that even though some non-black people's hair texture can lock, dreadlocks are nonetheless a racial characteristic, just as skin color is a racial characteristic. And then the U.S. District Court Judge Charles R. Butler Jr. disagreed in 2014 and dismissed the lawsuit. The EEOC appealed. Then in 2016, a unanimous three-judge panel of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the district court ruling dismissing the claim. But then it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused, thus permitting employers like CMS to ban most, if not all, natural hairstyles. So that's where my confusion lies, and because of remembering this particular situation. I'm sorry if I took up too much time. I'll leave the line.
No apology. New information, still learning. So the Supreme Court didn't hear the case. I was thinking, because I was like, wow, like they had a Supreme Court case about natural hair? Like, wow, I would think I would have heard that, or somebody would have heard that. But okay, so they didn't hear it, so the lower court's ruling stood. I can't say that I'm surprised about that. I would say that since the Supreme Court didn't hear the case, that law stands. I mean, somebody could bring it up again, they could go back or see if they could get the case to the Supreme Court and make them reinterpret it. Have California, if New York, I mean, ostensibly, if you have enough states where they start passing laws of this nature, then they could take the case back and make the court hear it again, and they could come up with a new opinion. None of that really would answer the original question that I had about, you know, who would enforce. Like, even if the Supreme Court said, yeah, you got to You know, you can't be mistreating people who have natural hair or locks or whatever it is. Okay. Who's going to do the enforcing now that the Supreme Court or whomever else has said, yeah, that's wrong. You can't do that. You got to make sure that they get the promotion, make sure that they get the raise. All right. And the white people that are going to make sure this happens are, and it would have to be white people. I mean, I couldn't imagine unless white people appointed a body of black people and said, and we're going to appoint these black people to be the ones to go out and make sure that this happens. Or you will answer to these white people if you do not abide by the Crown Act or whatever other laws they pass in New York or wherever else. It just, yeah, that is the crucial question. Like, I wouldn't even need the court or Governor Newsom or anything else. Just point to the white people that you have to answer to if you violate that. Like, that's all I need. Like, let me see what they look like. And if they got their taser at the ready and they look like they are ready to roll and got their flak jacket, okay, bang, this is going to be great. Let's all get our locks and grow out our hair. It is going to be a new day on the plantation. We will be all good. But if I don't see that, if it's like Jane Elliott, or you can't even point me to the office of where the people that are supposed to handle these reports that this is still happening, yeah, I'm going to. Emmy will remain brilliant, and we'll just say that she has accurately assessed the situation until proven otherwise, until I get the enforcement army. Other folks have comments, questions?
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have quite a bit of observations and reports. I want to start out with there was some documentation that I came across on some juvenile cases. It's some kind of procedure called juvenile risk assessment or something like that, where like a juvenile case or a juvenile before he or she is about to get to sentencing or is about to be judged in some sort, depending on what the charge is, they have this profile or observation process where they do all of these research and studies on the likelihood for the juvenile to reoffend in doing a crime. And it goes into such detail. It mentions the racial classification and the age of the juvenile and whether or not the juvenile has one or both parents and whether or not the child uses verbal aggression in or is in a gang or is antisocial, has antisocial friends or uses a lot of particular language on the personality of the child. But the thing that I find confusing is that they have these percentages on whether or not the child will reoffend or commit another crime. For instance, talking about aggression, violence, and other things like family and focus, all kinds of words they use, and they use these percentages, whether something, the aggression could be 25% or the aggression could be 35%. And the ability to accept responsibility is 50%. I don't necessarily understand what they mean by that. But I was on a website for Florida Juvenile Justice, and they have like this 2013-2014 portion of data that they have displayed for different racial classifications of juveniles. And I noticed that for the whole, they have either a low risk and a moderate and a high risk to reoffend. And I noticed with black males, it's 48.7%. And with white male, it said 26.4. And I believe the Hispanic was 15.6 and other 0.8. So I'm not sure where they're getting this data from and how they're coming to these conclusions. That was the first one I wanted to share. Next one is, there was another piece of documentation where there was a black male who was the center of a custody case, and the term mildly retarded was used, documents, and I heard as well. I know you schizophrenia or mentally stable or like that, but retardation was quite often to describe the black male who was born, it looks like, was born in 1989, so it's probably like late 20s now, but the case was old, so it was describing him and the mother is having mental issues, but I don't recall seeing that with the white cases where the situation is pretty much similar. So that was another one I wanted to point out. My next one is, there was a black couple that came into the marriage license area, and the that she was helping to process their application. And black people are intentionally victimized. We're all victims. So the black male, as they were leaving, he made the comment that I's married, boss. He said this to the white woman, the supervisor. So she's like, oh, geez, or whatever. And then he said it again, and they got up and left, and, you know, and everyone's laughing. And then so she says, okay, if you're married, then show me the papers or whatever. So that was another quick one. My next one is, there was a situation where I was walking to my vehicle, and a white male, the one that I told you about, that was trying to get to the to get his own apartment. We came across a judge that we both know. So I kept walking across the street, and he stopped in the middle of the street. And I guess he was talking to him about some court procedure that's coming up, or a court hearing that's coming up. And I didn't hear exactly all of what they said, but I guess he thought that I was the black male that was head of the civil court directing. That's in a higher position than I am. And then I hear him say, oh, no, that's not him. He's just a little short. He's just a little shorter, but the same color. So once he was done talking to the judge was like, oh, you know, are you still working over there? I said, yes, sir. I'm pretty much still over there. So I asked him where was the guy that he was talking about, because I decided I was going to document that. And he said, oh, he's going out of town with some of the big wigs, and he also is going to be going to a family reunion. I'm like, dang, how did he know all this stuff about him? He said, you know, he's really not interested in going because, you know what, black family reunions, they tend to have more fun and more entertainment. And I just pretty much said, well, a family reunion is a family reunion, and people just come together, I guess, to do what they do with people they barely have even met, right? So you say, yeah, I guess you're right. So my next one is, there we had a 4th of July luncheon this week, and a white woman made a comment that gives support to white supremacy. So I'm going toward the front door lobby, and she's looking toward the other ladies, and this was planned and calculated, in my opinion. So she's like, you know what, I'm going to dye my hair blue, and I'm going to wear a red dress, and I have my white skin, and that'll be my 4th of July outfit. And then she said, you know what, they just might fire me if I do that. And then I just said, wow. And I went inside the office to continue my job. And then, you know, I notified a black female. This is her supervisor that made this comment. So, you know, what does your skin color have to do with the so-called American colors? I have two more. This one is where on Monday we was having some issues with our camera to take pictures for the passports and do it another way that had to do with being or taking out an SD card out of the digital camera and putting it in the side of the machine. So we had to learn how to do that. So I notified the black male customer that came in that wanted his picture taken. And I was like, well, we're having some errors and glitches with the camera. You know, I apologize for the inconvenience, trying to be professional. And he was like, oh my goodness, you know, this is what we pay our tax dollars for. So I didn't really pay attention to that. So, you know, once again, I was apologizing to him. And then the white female that's more so well-versed on the camera, so she helped us get the situation figured out, got a picture taken, and got him out of there. So he was basically saying, hey, when it comes to training, I just recommend that you need to definitely show them how to do it and not just you know how to do it. So the non-white, non-black female, she's like, oh, you know, we just have to figure this out. And apparently he said something else and then she walked away. But in my opinion, it wasn't nothing that warranted someone to be upset, because I agree with him. And she showed us how to do it. So he leaves, and the non-white, non-black female comes back. And she's like, so how do you do this? You know, the tone was very hostile, unprofessional. And the white female just basically told us, that you just take this out, once you take the picture and you put it in the side of the machine, you click open file, grab the image, and it'll fix it up for you. So it's pretty much a few steps, easy, and we was ready to go. And she makes the comment, and she was in, she said, you know, I was just trying to figure out what to do because I was almost about to strangle that guy. So violence, strangle. So I decided to jot that one down. And that's when I wanted to share. And my last one is I came up with another term. It's called secondary confirmation. It's basically where a person is mistreated, where mainly a coworker, it can be a coworker or a customer, will ask somebody for information and they tell them accurate information. And then that person you've said it to will go to another person to see if it's true. And that second person will tell them the same thing the first person, which is the victim or the person that's being mistreated or the employee that's being mistreated. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. Secondary confirmation. As though the non-white person is not trustworthy, you'd better get a second, maybe even a third opinion, as opposed to just listening to some non-white person, regardless of title. Is that the secondary confirmation?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's a very good way to describe it.
Right on. Excellent term. That is very common. And again, that's why I said we end up with so many non-white people who, so many non-white people, victims of racism, who end up, you know, reporting, feeling like they have lost some of their confidence, maybe have had their black self-respect wounded a little bit in these type of work environments, where I'm here, I was hired. They don't just pick, you know, anybody off the street randomly. And I've been here for some while. I got some seniority and you got to go. That she just started working here 6 months and you're going to go ask her to make sure that I'm right. Like, man, but woo, all right. And I trained her, in fact, like, man, let's see. You all have got the most like scheming, white. Well, I mean, now this is the courthouse. I'll repeat what I just said. They don't just pick anybody off the street. I don't think, to work at the courthouse. Generally, they got, you know, a vetting process, they say, to work at the courthouse. To have a white woman come in and say, I ought to, it's Independence Day at all, wear, dye my hair blue and a red dress, and then I'll have my white skin. And the kicker for me is I'd get in trouble if I did. Like, why would you get in trouble? What would be the problem if you did that? Get in trouble with who? Like, scheming. The white chick before, word number one, I guess, said, I'm going to wear the same thing and dare someone to say something. Got my own journal. I'm reading to write down what they say. See if I could get them. And you're like, man, what in the world? Who are these at the courthouse? Who are these white chicks? And the white skin, that's not even true. I thought Dr. Welsing, because she described that in the ISIS papers, the red, white, and blue flag. I'll see. I'm not at home. Maybe somebody who has the ISIS papers, they can flip and find that page, since I don't have my copy at the ready. But she does describe that, the colors of the flag, and how that why and how that relates to the system of racism, white supremacy, including the pale, non-melanin or melanin deficient skin of whites. She talks about that explicitly, but that's not even true. Your skin is not white. You can grab any slice of paper, legal paper, at the courthouse. This is white. You are not that color. Pale, yes. Melanin deficient, absolutely. White, no. Let's see. They said 48.7. That is precise. Like, we got it down to a T. Like, man, where did you get this data? That it's 48.7% of black men. Some of they said the classifications, the percentage of aggression. Like, how do you even calculate such a, like, man, they can, when you are in a position of power, you can just say things and make it. That's how you end up with, what is it? White hyphen or slash black as a racial classification. And that's just what it is. And then come back with another one, black slash white, and have that as a racial classification on the same form with a straight face and say, this is a legal document. That is how, when you are in a position of power, you just get to say, this is what it's going to be. What is the number for this year? The percent of Negro males that are going to be recidivists. 48.7? 48 points? All right, that's what it'd be. Cool. What's the percent of aggression? 50%? 60%. We'll move it up this year. I mean, let's see. Speaking of aggression, the white woman said she wanted to strangle the fella at the courthouse. Couldn't figure out how to get the photos done. Newfangled 21st century technology. Couldn't figure it out. Now, they just had a white woman at the courthouse before who said that her affection was so high that if these white gals that she worked with, if they committed a murder, she would help them cover it up. And then a month later, I was ready to strangle him. She already got assistance in the bag. It might not be the same white woman, but I mean, wow. Like, this is, and again, this is at the courthouse. I just said one of the reasons we are reading The Gift of Fear. That whole book is about, we are in a violent world. The courthouse. There's the confirmation, not from recalcitrant black males, the 48.7% that can't stop robbing and looting and raping white women in Florida, but the white women at the courthouse that are plotting to kill people and cover it up. At the court, and is this the way we are supposed to talk in the workplace? Like, dang. Is it his fault, the customer's fault, that, you know, you don't know how to use the machine to get the photos done? It's his fault. Come on, man. System of white supremacy would not operate without white women. I said before about Kizzy's cousin's report, white women orchestrating the terrorism. And I thought that was important as well about the retardation. I need water. The language that was used in those reports. We got all the statistics that I thought was important as well, obviously. But the language used to describe that, oh, yes, and the parents, you know, were developmentally delayed and retarded and blah, 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 and including all of that information. I think that's an important distinction, just to be able to point that out. And I was pretty certain that something tacky was going to happen at the 4th of July luncheon. Pretty much as soon as that was mentioned, I was thinking, oh, man, that's why I say all the time, if you can get out of those, you know, luncheons, barbecues, whatever it is, do so, because I just expect the tendency to be that something tacky's. That's where the woman said she was going to dye her hair and all that stuff. But I would expect something to happen there. If you have to be there, be on alert, because people generally, Mr. Fuller said, when you have those sort of events, the best you can expect is tacky. Blue hair, red dress, white skin. That's the best you can expect at the 4th of July luncheon. Secondary confirmation. Thank you for the new term. Caller in Florida, always a PhD in white supremacy at the courthouse. Other folks have any other comments, questions, suggestions that they wanted to share before we wrap things up? Workplace racism. I'll check one more time, make sure everybody is satisfied. We should be here tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the compensatory call-in. We'll review. Hopefully everybody managed to get through the holiday safely. We'll review news, events from the last 7 days, offer any suggestions folks might have to help us get this problem solved immediately. But that'll be Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Almost going to share. I'll share that tomorrow. I had a quick thought, but we have ample time for tomorrow. Make sure you are eating well. Summertime and the holiday this week, it was lots of just nonsense being consumed. Eat well. That goes a long way to helping you feel better. And I contend a little bit more black self-respect if you choose to speak up, if you choose to do a counter-racist experiment. I think you'll have a little bit more pep, a little bit more energy, a little bit more self-respect when we are eating well, taking good care of ourselves, drinking lots of water. It is warm weather now, so you should be drinking more water, not non-water beverages that probably dehydrate you and have a lot of caffeine and sugar too. Drinking more water, getting some exercise. Wonderful things that we can do that should be a central component of our counter-racist code. Everybody satisfied for the evening?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida?
Yes, sir. I also wanted to add that I'll definitely continue the 100 ounces of water. Like sometimes more, and I've been encouraging the coworkers to try to drink more water. And also for the 4th of July, I came in and I noticed, now this is just hilarious, because like I know you've been mentioning Cheetos, right? Like, on in the machine. Like not only one type of Cheeto, okay, so crunchy Cheetos. And they just restocked the machine, and on the left side of it said Flaming Hot Cheetos. Mm. Now they got two different kinds of Cheetos. I'm like, man, Cheetos is everywhere now. So, and my last one is I bought a salad, okay, and a big bottle of water, and everybody had their hot dogs and beans. So they were looking at me like, and I said, oh yes, healthy eating. And so they just, you know, some white people were given a constructive response. They say, you know what? Oh, man, I got to be like you. So I wanted to add that, too.
Bravo. Black self-respect right there. As I said, central component of counter-racism. You don't even have to say the word racism. White supremacy. Got my water. Got my salad. Getting my greens in. Nutrients. Doing my counter-racism. Right. They want you with the Cheetos. They want Cheetos, 2-3 hot dogs. We got the flaming hot Cheetos. You saw Chester. That's what they want. That's what you're supposed to be having. Get his cholesterol spiked up. Get some of that MSG in his system. Bravo. Drink more. And you're down in Florida, so absolutely you should be drinking lots of water. I have no idea what your summer looks like, but I am sure it is way warmer there than it is here in Seattle, where I'd be surprised if we broke 65 degrees today. But more water, more water, more water, and hope that your colleagues don't sit your water on the floor in the workplace. I guess if it was going to be a thread to connect everything, wouldn't leave my water around either. The folks on the job, keep that in eyesight if you can. Might not, or it might end up anywhere in the workplace. Can't even leave your water and expect that not to be tampered with. Learn that from the Florida courthouse as well. Let's see. Yes. Got my notes. All the other folks satisfied? Grand. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. Could have been out partying, celebrating, getting into some zaniness for the evening. Again, we'll be here. Compensatory call in tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you're listening to the archives or what have you, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com and we can read your commentary next week for workplace racism. untiljustice@gmail.com if you have your own workplace situation or comments on what was shared this evening. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Man, this weekend, the sobriety checkpoints will be out in full force, probably disproportionately located in areas with black people. That generally tends to be the pattern. So I would encourage, drink more water, what I just said. Drink more water. That would be grand. If you got to consume any narcotics, whatever that is, get to one spot and stay there. See if you can just pick a location, stay in for the evening, and then leave the following day. That way you're sober, you can think clear, make great decisions, keep yourself safe, hopefully not be in contact with any enforcement officials. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or man. Let me pause and reinforce this with an illustration from the week. So I do this on the program because this is counter-racism. The same thing I just said with the salad, same thing I just said with the water. These are basic things that are elements of counter-racism. Sometimes the basics are overlooked. That was Gus T as well. That's why I was tubby this time 2 years ago. Getting in that vehicle, sober, buckling up every time, that is fundamental counter-racism. I don't just end every press. Many things that I could say at the end of the program. I could just say, invest in the cows. That would be a grand way to end every program. We could just mention any books that I like, read something from Medical Apartheid. There's lots of ways that we could close out the program. I've been saying that for years now. Buckle up. Sober. Not being on the phone. I don't say that all the time, but I do try and throw that in as well. These are fundamentals of counter-racism. We just said, Emmy emphasized, we have no idea how much you're being watched, even while you're in the vehicle. So people that I know personally, people that I can put my hand on personally, some of them that are with me right now, so they are out and about. I say this all the time. I nag them, hey, buckle up every time, buckle up every time, buckle up every time. Of course, when I'm in the vehicle with a buckle up every time, what the hell? These folks travel, go out and about where I'm not present. I am told they're out and about messing around. They go to switch lanes, don't have turn signal. Whoop, lights come on. You already know the drill. Black mother is present. Like, geez, is this what I needed in my day? Like, being a mom is hard enough. Being a parent is hard enough. Did I really need unnecessary contact with an enforcement official in my day? Is it anything that we could have done to minimize the likelihood of this happening? having a seatbelt buckle, that would be one. I guess the turn signal, I don't say that one, but use your turn signal, I guess. And I'm not saying that they don't go out and terrorize black people, even if you do all that, because they absolutely do, myself a victim. But the way that I phrase it generally is minimize. Let's do all that we can to minimize the likelihood. That should be all the time, especially this weekend. Buckled up, sober, not on the cell phone, not doing a combination of all three. Oh, and the kicker, after all of that, 30 seconds after the enforcement official drives off, whammo ticket. They like to give massive tickets here in Seattle. I've been in the vehicle with another victim of racism that I nag about this all the time. Buckle up every time you're in the vehicle. They like to get like $200 tickets for seatbelt infractions here in the great Pacific Northwest. What, like 30 seconds after the enforcement official pulls off, job done, one for my score sheet for the evening, quota, hops right back on the cell phone. The driver, victim of racism, victim of racism. What in the world? Woo! Minimize contact. We are in a system of white supremacy, terrorism against black people. If we are attempted counter-racist, that should be reflected in our conduct at all times. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Kyle signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you're so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.